Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in. Another edition of Leave It in the Ring, my boxing fans official radio show. I'm your host Dave Duenas with my co-host Gabriel Montoya. What a beautiful, beautiful day here in Northern California. Obviously, it's got to be beautiful in Southern California, and hopefully you have the sun out wherever you're at. If you're in the UK, obviously you don't have the sun out. You have the moon out and about. And it's a full moon, hopefully, for you, so you get lucky out there. Anyways, we got a lot of boxing here to cover, a lot of interviews, a lot of things happening here on the show alone. It's a little silent out there in the boxing world. Not a whole lot of matches going to be televised, so it's kind of slowing down for us here in this April. From it having a really great upstart from the beginning of April, and it's kept fight fans talking about the sport, and it's really honestly shut the mouths of a lot of people that said boxing is dead and boxing is never going to rise up again. But the veterans of the sport say no about that. They decided to unite with each other and say, hey, you know what, let's create a big buzz out there for the boxing world and the TV world for people to witness that, hey, at any given moment, at any given month out of a year, we could stir things up and make people turn heads and cheeks. And that's exactly what a lot of these veteran fighters did, and it continues to be happening in the boxing world here. Let me introduce my co-host, Gabriel Montoya from Southern California. What's up, Gabe?
Not much, man. You're exactly right about the weather, man. It is a beautiful thing today. I can't wait to – I got to head out for the Fight Night Club here in a little bit, and I can't wait to get outside, dude. It is just awesome.
I know. You know what? Eventually, I'm going to have to maybe move my computer. You know, in the summertime, it gets really hot over here in Modesto, California. So I'm going to have to figure out a way to maybe broadcast the show outside. You know, when I could barbecue at the same time and have a couple of beers on the side and some ice bucket here so that I can enjoy the show and have some fight fans call in so we can talk boxing, man, because it's beautiful out there right now. You know, we got a nice little wind so it can keep you cool. But I'm in the office here, so that we can broadcast to Leave It in the Ring and listeners and get our interviews on and stuff. A little bit, we're going to be calling in Kerry Lane, the son, the oldest of Mills Lane, the referee, the most famous guy, Mills Lane. Let's Get It On from Let's Get It On Promotions to talk to us a bit about their fight card happening tomorrow night on Solo Book Sale. Jesse Brinkley, the Contender Series star, is going to get in, who we just had on, Peter Quillen, the Kid Chocolate, on Leaving the Ring. I believe it was last week when we had him on. Well, they're going to be finally facing off this Friday on Solo Book Sale. There's been some reports that Jesse Brinkley's shoulder was hurt. So we're going to find out if there's a lot of truth to it. But then there's been some reports saying that his shoulder is okay. How much, has got into play of his shoulder being damaged? I mean, you know, when you think of terms of injury, you think of it, and Brinkley being an older guy, you know, a veteran of the sport and stuff, obviously he's going to know some tricks of the trades of trying to hide it or maybe, you know, fight through it. But regardless, you know, your age kind of catches up. Your body ends up telling you in your mind frame that, hey, listen, you got to slow down here, Tiger. So how much is he recouped from this shoulder injury? Is he going to be 100% facing a very fast, talented kid like Kid Chocolate, Gabriel? I don't know. I mean, does he need to be 100% for this fight?
Yeah. He needs to be the proverbial 110% for this fight. In order to beat, you know, Peter Quillen. I watched Peter over a couple of days of the wild card sparring, getting ready. And, you know, he's the kind of guy, he's kind of like Alejandro Perez. He's always at the wild card training, whether he's got a fight or not. He's a guy that's in fantastic shape. He's not looking to make weight. You know, he usually hovers around where he needs to be, somewhere in like 168, 170. Because, he fights at that kind of prospect middleweight. Kind of weight where it's like 163. For this fight, it's 165 because Brinkley asked for it. And Pete Quillen just looks sharp as all get out. I mean, apparently, like Steve was telling me, he looked sharp, you know, beating up on Nobu Ishida in the gym right before Ishida went to go fight Kirkland. And then when I saw him, it was probably like 2 weeks later, he was sharper still, you know, fighting against Robert Garcia, and it was another guy who I didn't know. He just looked really good in the gym. He kind of slowly took his time, looked in great shape, gliding around the ring, totally in control. There was never a time when he wasn't in control. I just think that he was really ready for Brinkley, and it was the kind of fight that was going to be a test, but now with a bad shoulder, that kind of takes a little, you know, luster off of it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the thing is that Brinkley is just one of those kind of fighters that needs everything that he can kind of muster up to bring him the ring. I mean, he's fighting an ultra-talented kid, Kid Chocolate, a guy that's going to be fast, elusive. He's, you know, confident, and if he's as fluent as he is when he comes to speech, you know, when he does interviews, if he's as fluent as he is with that in the ring, you know, Brinkley has a long night ahead of him facing Kid Chocolate, you know, because it looks like this kid is not going to melt in your hands. You know what I mean? So Brinkley here, to me, if you have a shoulder injury, I know there's a lot of money on the line. You know, there's a lot of pump up in Reno. Reno is a good fighting place when it comes to supporting their hometown hero, and Brinkley brings out the crowd, and a lot of times you think that these veteran guys that look at these paychecks, you know, where Brinkley's been getting some pretty good paychecks for the past year, you know, that he may be looking at this, I don't want to disappoint the fans, so I'm just going to come out, win or lose. So we've seen Brinkley at times in points of his career where he really doesn't even seem confident enough to win, but he just kind of gets his – it's like an inner body, inner outer experience, you know, with his body. You know what I mean? He's like, yeah, I'm here, but I'm really not there. So I'm basically just watching myself get into the ring, you know. And I think that's what we might end up seeing with Kid Chocolate. You know, it's been 10 years since Brinkley's lost in Reno, if I'm correct about that. You know, he hasn't lost in 10 years, a decade, you know, and he's been successful in his run of winning streaks in Reno, Nevada, but I think that streak may be ending because he's getting a fresh, strong, hungry Golden Boy fighter.
Yeah, I just don't see. You know, I was going to pretty much pick Quillen to kind of be crowded early, have a little bit of trouble early with the pressure and some of the experience, because it is a jump up in experience from what Quillen's been fighting lately. You know, he had like Dennis Sharp. And I forget who the guy was right before it. Let me look it up. Martin Desjardins, who was like 7-18-4. You know, these are just, you know, Sharp is a 17-5 guy coming off 5 losses. Just kind of a guy, you know, to be beaten. Although the Fernando Zuniga fight was not too bad, which was right before that. But Brinkley, you know, he's coming off a loss, but he's got 6 losses. But he's you know, he's a rugged guy. He's a veteran guy that's got a lot of tricks. Can give you a lot of different looks, and I expected that to be a problem, but then, you know, Quillen to kind of take over, and after he kind of saw a few things, begin to kind of unveil his different weapons. Now, you know, I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but knowing that the guy's got only one good arm, you know, I don't really see this as terribly competitive. You know, we'll see, you know. Jesse's a consummate professional, and says a lot about him that he's willing to go forward and do the fight anyways, but you know, it's hard to think that this is going to be anything but you know, an easier than expected win, you know?
Yeah, you know, I hate to say that it's going to be easy for Kid Chocolate here with Brinkley. He's a workhorse. He's a guy that, you know, the rumor is, not even the rumor, it's been, you know, been said that he can tend to get a little lazy, but when it comes to when the lights kick on, he's all about showtime. You know, he does come to fight. You know, there's no question in his heart. You can't question the guy's heart when he comes to fight. And really, with Reno, Nevada, his home, you know, where he's coming out of, the fans there really lift him up to the occasion. You know, but how far are they going to be able to lift him up? I mean, the fans can't fight for you. And Kid Chocolate really noted that out there when he was with us on Leaving the Ring last time. You know, the fans can't win the fights for him. You know, it's him that, and only him, that needs to get in the ring and take punches and throw punches and hopefully be successful and dictate the fight. Having an injured shoulder, I mean, a lot of people were already counting him out regardless because he was coming off the loss of Lucian Bute, you know, saying that, listen, this is an old horse here. He may have, you know, at the end of this race, he's no longer durable. You need to put him away in the stables and just throw him some hay and allow him to graze in the fields and ride into the sunset. But now, you know, you're hearing this, okay, he's got a shoulder injury. And now you're really saying, hey, let's just throw him into the stables and get the shotgun and get rid of him. You know what I mean? I'm going to call in Terry, you know, Terry Lane, and see what he has to say. I mean, how much can he get into and talk to us about the shoulder injury? How much details? How did he hurt it? And how confident they are now with this being heard and said about this injury that he's possibly going in against Kid Chocolate. Phone lines will be open in a few minutes, 347-215-7598. And we'll chop it up here, some boxing. I can see a few people online. Oh, excuse me. We get some water. For some reason, got caught. I can see a few people on the board right now, and I can see already a lot of people want to talk about Mosey and Pacquiao. Yeah, it's getting down that close. 2 weeks away of seeing both of these guys get in the ring and bang it out. So we'll patch you guys in, and we will talk some boxing about Sugar Shane Mosey and Manny Pacquiao. But right now, let's find out what Lane's got to say about his fighter who's going to be getting in with Kid Chocolate. You, who I really like, too. You know, I mean, the guy gave a hell of an interview, man. Talk about Mr. Personality all the way.
Oh, I know, dude. Yeah, seriously. I had put up an article this week on Max Boxing. It was a separate interview from what we did from in the gym. And he's just full of quotes and is just a good storyteller, you know, just right off the bat. So, yeah, yeah, you know, check it out. His whole thing about the happy face is pretty damn funny. So,
his happy face, yeah. And toilet paper run and the whole works, man. I mean, I thought it was it was hilarious. And then I'm getting told right now that Christian Favela.
Please enjoy the music while your party is reached.
Who's going to be getting in with Mauricio Pereira? He's going to be ready for us like in 20 minutes. We're going to be rolling pretty fast in the interviews here and then get down.
David, what's up, man?
What's up there, Terry? How you doing, brother? I was grooving to the song there that you had on the man.
I'm just sitting here in a weigh-in now, man. I'm just going out of my mind, but, man, this is going to be one good hell of a fight, I'll tell you what.
You know, I'm really excited about this fight. Even when the first time you guys had announced it, you know, we spoke about it. But now, you know, Terry, now I'm a little concerned. I'm hearing that Brinkley's not 100%. There's a shoulder possible injury happening, and we're not sure whether or not you're going to see the full Brinkley coming out, full-fledged in this fight with Kid Chocolate.
Well, you know what? I'm not here to BS you. Jesse did have a shoulder condition. Basically, for years and years of throwing punches, he developed calcium deposits in his left shoulder and on his bicep. And what that does, it just causes an enormous amount of pain, and it flared up on him at the very beginning of this camp. Having said that, we did what we could do, and he's feeling good. He's feeling positive. So I think you're gonna see a good Jesse Brinkley. But I won't lie to you, the camp was not 100%.
So right now, is it fair to say that there's maybe some soreness to that shoulder going into this fight?
Yes, there's going to be soreness. I mean, you know, he's coping with it well. He's coped with it during training camp. I did see him spar the other day, and he looked very sharp. But there is soreness, and it affects any time he throws his left hand. I mean, we're talking about his jab, his hook. So it's his left shoulder cup, and that's really what's causing him pain. But it will be sore, but. You know, I know Jesse, he fights his ass off, and I think he's going to be running on pure adrenaline that night, to be honest with you.
Right. You know, there's no question that Jesse Brinkley fights his ass off when it comes to being a showmanship in front of his hometown in Reno and stuff. But, you know, when it comes to his left hand, which I thought that would be the more successor if he caught a rhythm, because his jab has always been kind of a hidden secret. A lot of people don't really – they really underestimate that jab of his. I mean, he was able to use it effectively against Stephen Curtis. You guys concerned about that he's not going to be able to use that jab, and now he's got to try to find something against a fast, fluent kid like Quillen?
I am concerned, but, Dave, you know, you and I have known each other for a couple of years now. Dude, I always get concerned with these fights. I am concerned that he's not going to be able to use it to the fullest extent, but he tells me everything is going to be okay. I just talked to him right now. He's just doing some paperwork with the commission. He feels good, and we're just going to take it into tomorrow night. Peter Kid Chocolate Quillen could not be a better guy and a great fighter. This is one for the fight fans. This is a fight for the fight fans. Everybody should watch this. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Gabriel, you got any questions for Terry Lane, brother?
Yeah, what's up with Born to be Wild?
Hey, that's my theme song. Hey. that's the soundtrack to my life, man. What are you talking about?
Beyond that, you're absolutely right. We, you know, I have met you, so I can attest to that. I'm curious. Is this condition that with his shoulder, is it something that will warm up as he goes along? Will he be able to, you know, will the pain lessen or get worse as he goes along in the fight?
Well, I mean, there's only one person who can really answer that question. That's Jesse. You know, when it started to flare up, it was pretty much consistent pain, and he couldn't shake it out and kind of get used to it. So, like I said, I think, though, this is just my prediction. This is just me talking. I think he's going to be running on pure adrenaline. He really likes this fight. He likes this matchup for himself, even though he's the underdog. And we'll see what happens. But, you know, I really don't know the answer to that, to be honest with you.
Can you talk a little bit about the rest of the card and what's going on with there's one prospect in particular you guys have, Brandon Gonzalez, that we've talked a lot about on this show. What's the latest with him, and what are your plans for him in the future?
Well, you know, Brandon is seriously still one of the best fighters I've seen in terms of pure talent. You know, Brandon's had some ups and downs in his personal life. He's switched trainers. He's back with the Virgil Hunter now, training with Andre Ward. So it's just really logistical the logistical switch-ups that have really set Brandon back. But, look, I mean, Brandon's still got a very bright future, and we just need to find a groove and get in the groove and stay in the groove and, you know, take it all the way. So, you know, everything's good with Brandon. He just, you know, like I said, there's problems in his personal life. I'm sure he doesn't want to talk about that or have me talk about them especially. But he did change from Jeff Mayweather to Virgil Hunter. He's in camp with Andre preparing for Arthur Abraham, and that's what's up with him, you know, but I still expect big things from him in the future.
What? Let me ask you, what happened there with Jeff Mayweather, if you can, you know, kind of fill us in on that? I thought the relationship was good. I mean, did something happen, or was this just a change of because of the distance of travel he had to go to?
The latter of what you just said. It was just a logistical thing. You know, Brandon's got two great kids, a wife, and it was a logistical thing of having to go down there, not having proper camps. And he's able to drive pretty much every week to go out with Virgil. It's just a very short drive from his house in Sacramento. And it was a logistical thing. No falling out, no hard feelings. You know, Jeff and Virgil both are just a couple of the good guys in boxing. So it really was nothing more than that.
That's a hell of a marriage there, too. I really like that choice, man. Because I think the kind of athlete and fighter that, in terms of mentality, that Brandon is, that fits right in with what Virgil's trying to accomplish. I think that's a perfect, perfect choice. So he's one of the most underrated trainers.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, Virgil's been with Andre the whole time, but, you know, he has some criticism out there that he's having a lot of other fighters, but I think that's going to go away when you see what he's going to do with Brandon. I think his philosophy, along with Brandon's talent, is going to be a perfect match.
Yeah, definitely, you know, and I'm really excited to see what you know, Virgil does with Brandon, you know, because Brandon has so much talent, man. He just needed somebody to really kind of settle him and kind of tighten up a little bit on the things that he makes slight mistakes with. And, you know, Jeff Mayweather is a good trainer in his right, but Hunter to me is just like three notches above him when it comes to training fighters.
It's a partnership. I'm not sure why it hadn't happened last year. To be honest with you, I don't know why this is happening now and not a year ago from right now. But I think it's going to be a great relationship between the two, and I think you're just going to hear and see a lot of great things from the both of them.
Hmm. Well, there
we go. How is this promotion done? How's this promotion sold for you? You know, I'm curious just what a name like Peter Quinlan brings to the table for you guys. I mean, he's mainly with an East Coast fighter, just moved out here last year, started training at the Wild Card. And I think he's fought a little bit up north, but how did that translate into Reno?
Well, listen, I mean, let me see if I can explain this as best I can. Jesse always sells well in Reno. No matter who he's fighting, he's always sold well. He loves Reno and Northern Nevada. He's born and raised here. Everybody loves him. He's a family man. He's your everyman. He's a blue-collar guy. He hunts. He fishes. I hate to say it, but he's a white guy who can fight. And people love him here. You know, and we have noticed a difference, though. When he is in a fight, such as Curtis Stevens or Peter Quillen, it sells a lot better. People like to come to fights that mean something. People like to come to fights that there's not a clear A side and a clear B side. And this fight has done really well, and I can't wait to see what the final numbers are tomorrow.
Man, I hope it's going to be all that we think it's going to be. I'm excited about seeing this fight. I'm still trying to work it out for me to get out there, Terry, because I want to be there ringside to watch this fight. You know, I think it's going to be quite an experience, and I honestly believe the Reno crowd's going to be out there pretty heavy at night, tomorrow night.
Man, David, it's going to be wild. If you can make it out, man, we're buddies. Give me a call, man. We'll sit together at ringside and have a couple of fucking Tecatis. Oh, I don't know if I can curse. Sorry
yeah,
about
you
that.
Can curse.
But, if you can make it out, let's enjoy a great fight. And I'll tell you what, Lonnie Smith versus the dangerous David Rudella in a six-round fight. Hats off to both of those guys for taking this type of fight in a six-rounder. What a card this is going to be for TV.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that might steal the card in the show for Solo Book Sale when it comes to those two guys that are mixing it up. I'm excited about seeing Lonnie Smith in this fight with David Rudella. David Rudella is definitely not going to go anywhere and hide from him. It's going to be a slugfest.
Oh, man, to me, that could be Friday night easily.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Well, Terry, hey, thanks again, brother, for taking the time to speak to us, and I will give you a ring if I end up showing up at the hotel there in Reno.
Absolutely, man. Hey, thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it. Good luck to you. We'll see you tomorrow, hopefully, David, okay?
All right, brother. You take care.
Thanks, man. Bye, you too.
Yeah, that's another fight there, Gabe, that I think a lot of fight fans are not even taking account about is that David Rudella, who's a Southern California fighter, a guy that had a lot of high hopes, you know, who's also managed by Rolando, who manages Victor Ortiz, was really putting a lot of stock into him. And then, slowly but surely, his hand speed and his footwork kind of started doing the show and tell against fighters that were more mobile. You know, Lonnie Smith, the and Mexicano Negrito, I think that's what he goes by. Here's a guy that still has a lot of questions kind of looming around him, but has got decent hand speed, he's got fast feet, but doesn't have the balance there just yet. But he's now being put in with somebody that's a little bit more polished and someone you can pretty much say that is on his way of becoming a veteran of the sport in terms of now fighting everybody that's available around him.
Yeah, you know, it's a good fight. You know, David Rudella is a guy that I think people expected him to be, more of a blue chip guy. Then he kind of ran into some bad luck. He lost to Eloy Perez. It was a good fight. It was a tough fight. That's where he actually had an early loss, but was on a really long winning streak. And then came back and lost a fight that I don't think people really expected him to lose against Dante Jardin down in Mexico. And he got stopped in three. And you know, since then, he's been kind of on the slow build. He was on a Fight Night Club, and he fought to a draw against, another guy that was kind of unheralded, Juan Montiel. And I'm not exactly sure what's going on with him, but I did run into him the same day I ran into the Victor Ortiz's guy, Haas, at the wild card. And he was training. He looked in great shape. He'd been working with Pacquiao, apparently. And, he's a solid guy. I'm not quite sure what exactly went wrong. Maybe he didn't wasn't sitting down on his punches, maybe the power was not exactly real that we thought he had early. I think a lot of it is his tendency to not use his length in his division, fighting as a lightweight and kind of being, 5'11", 74-inch reach guy, you would think that he would sit behind a jab and also kind of use his strength. I mean, he's a bigger guy, but not always sit in the pocket and get into wars. And I think that was kind of his problem, is that he got used to overwhelming guys instead of using his boxing skill, and I think somewhere along the line that just backfired on him. We'll see. I mean, I think this is a hell of a fight. I think it's the right kind of fight for him. And particularly, Lonnie Smith is a guy that's a little bit younger. He's got some early losses in his career, but he's on a nice long winning streak against decent opposition, some questionable. I just think styles make fights, and the way these guys are, the kind of aggressive nature that they have, it's going to be a hell of a fight. It's one that I'm really looking forward to. This is kind of proof that it's not always about best versus best or undefeated versus undefeated. Sometimes it's just about two guys that have great comparable styles and mentalities. You put them together, and the chemistry, more often than not, is going to be fantastic. And I think it will in this fight.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't want to count out David Waddella in this fight because he does carry a punch. He is a guy that comes forward. He's a guy that is not worried about getting hit, not worried about looking cute in the ring or pretty or whatever the case is. He's a guy that looks to come to fight. You know, he comes to entertain. But, you know, at times, though, we've seen him gas out in his fights, you know, where you could kind of see that amount of pressure he puts on a vice versa on him. You know, he ends up getting tired rather than the other guy. You know, Lonnie Smith is a kid that hasn't been completely tested. We don't really know for sure how well he's going to mess with David Waddella, but when it comes to styles make fights, this is definitely a style that's going to make a fight. I'm excited about it. I got Lonnie Smith winning this fight. I think he can hurt David Waddella in the later rounds. I think he may be a little more fresher out of the two, you know, in terms that David Waddella has been in some pretty big fights himself, wars that you can kind of more or less say that he's been in. And Rodella's just got a lot of questions, not just around him, but in his head at this moment. I mean, this is definitely a crossroad fight for himself, you know, and whether or not his promotional group is just going to be using him as a stepping stone, you know, for other fighters that are under the banner of Golden Boy.
Yeah, you know, I think it could be that's the thing, you know, I think and Rodella, you know, it's no knock on him as a person. He's a hell of a guy, actually. I've met him a bunch of times and know him pretty decently. And he's a really nice guy, classy person, always fun to talk to. I think he kind of topped out, you know, and maybe he can use his experience in this fight and get something done. But I tend to think that the younger guy has a few more tools, a little more power, like you said, and should be able to prevail in this fight, you know. We'll see, though. You know, when a guy is only 12, you know, he's 12-2, he's got two draws, and nine knockouts, and you look at the opposition, and it's not exactly stellar. In fact, I think the times that he stepped up against, talking about Lonnie Smith, against an undefeated guy, he lost, you know, a majority decision. You know, and then beyond that, it's a lot of guys that are have a lot of losses on their records. This fight will say a lot about who Lonnie Smith is and where David Waddella is in his career. You know, is he on the upswing and kind of figuring it out? Or is he kind of an opponent at this point, you know, and a guy that's a fresh opponent, you know, a guy that's going to give you struggles and, you know, give you some sort of troubles in the fight, but ultimately may not be the guy that's going to beat you, you know, but more test you than anything. We'll see, you know. I think this is the right kind of development fight. You know, when we look at fights that are made, like I've got that article today, the Mismatch Report, you look at those fights and they're very lopsided. Dude coming off of 10 consecutive losses and he's fighting an undefeated guy. I don't think that really teaches somebody anything. But a fight like this, I think it does. I think there's plenty to be learned from both sides.
Yeah, definitely. There's plenty to be learned. I mean, you got to look at where does Waddella go from if he loses to this younger guy coming in who's the fresher guy out of the two. I'm really curious. Like I said, I don't want to count out Waddella. I think he still has a punch, and I think he still has determination and stuff. But he's going to be fighting a lot of demons coming into this fight here because, to me, he's not the guy that people are mostly talking about. It's Lonnie Smith here that most people are coming out to see and to check out to see if he's the real deal and how well he does against David Waddella. David Waddella is just not fighting a guy in front of him. He's fighting the picks and the who's that are out there to go see him lose. We're trying to find out right now with Christian Favela, who's going to be fighting Mauricio Herrera on the Blood Series and Thompson card. We're trying to situate it. He was originally scheduled to come on at 6:30, but they're telling me they want him on right away. But our translator, we're trying to get a hold of him. So let me know that. Hold on. Let me give me a second here. Let us know that if he's going to be able to come on. Atlanta, they have two. Okay, he's telling me they're in the weigh-ins right now and that he will be calling us as soon as they're ready to be on the air. But Frankie Lau, who is a guy that had an upset this past Saturday, well, we're going to be calling him in right now in about another 5 minutes. to talk to him a little bit about his win that happened this Saturday night. I believe it was on Azteca TV or Azteca Box, one of those. And I'm trying to remember the guy's name. I got so many things going on. Everybody's texting me, telling me we have a lot of stuff going. Victor Ortiz, his manager. What else do we have going on? I mean, there's so many things right now happening. Hey, I appreciate all the emails that we're getting from leaving the ring for the mailbag. And just to let you know, the reason why we haven't responded back to anybody that's been emailing us is because we're getting them all sorted out so that we can have a mailbag put on the Leaving the Ring website. Also, we still got some tickets. We got tickets for Solo Book Sale for next week. You know, over there in Indio, California, anybody want a shot at them, all you got to go do is get on the www.leavingtheRing.com and make your pick there for the ticket giveaway. There's three picks out of there. You got Brinkley versus Peter Quillen. You got Rodella versus Lonnie. And I believe for tomorrow night, we got I forgot who we got on there. But there's somebody else on that whole pool there that you can make your pick. And if you get all three right, you can win two pairs of tickets and go to Indio, California and witness the Solo Book Sale live, man. So give it a shot. See how well you are. Be brave. I know a lot of people like to do picks, but they don't want to be brave about it, man. You know, want to do this fantasy thing. But, you know, I like to do fantasy picks too, but I like to find out if there's something at the end of the day, you know, where I'm going to win. Give me something for the effort. That's what I say there, Gabriel.
I try to keep my fantasy picks to supermodels, you know. That's how I...
And haven't won one yet. Hey, let's see what we got on the line right now. Chris, who wants to talk? Mosley and Pacquiao. What's up, Chris? You're on line right now.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, brother. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I know we're like a week away from the fight and everything. I just want to know what your guys' input on the fight. It's kind of funny that Mosley hasn't really brought this up yet, but I remember a few years ago after Pacquiao beat Hatton, Mosley was there at the press conference and he called Pacquiao out, and Pacquiao never responded to him. I don't know if you guys ever caught that on YouTube ever before or not.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is that when that all kind of came down, I went to the wild card and I interviewed Freddie Roach about almost something similar to that, because I had spoken to Shane Mosley. He was on Leaving the Ring right after that Hatton win. And, you know, Shane, I believe, had his win over in Antonio Margarito. And he was saying, hey, listen, I'll go down to 140 to fight Manny Pacquiao. I'm willing to fight him, you know, after he had beaten Oscar De La Hoya and Ricky Hatton. And so when I asked Freddie about that, you know, their answer was just blunt. It was, you know, we won't fight him unless it's at 144 or something like that. And then they just said, you know what, we just don't want to fight him, period. So that was kind of dismissed, you know what I mean?
Yeah. My thing is, I noticed when you guys talked to I think his name is Kareem Mayfield last week, when you guys had the conversation with him, and he talked about Pacquiao being a little bit uncomfortable with that type of style as far as him roughing him up and everything. Do you think that could be a sign of Pacquiao's maybe weakness? Because I haven't seen a fighter yet, you know, being that type of style towards him yet. You know, rough him up, hold him a little bit, and push him back, which I know Mosley definitely has the strength and everything, you know, to do that type of fight.
You know, that's a good, interesting point. I think that's, you know, it's funny. When we had Kareem Mayfield here on the show, the talks was he was fired because of his performance and holding and during their sparring sessions, you know, and they had told him to kind of take it easy. And Gabriel made a point like, well, wouldn't you want to be held? Because that's kind of what Mosley does. He likes to hit 1-2, then hold you and kind of smother you up and walk you back. You know, I haven't seen anybody hold Manny Pacquiao, and I think it raises questions whether or not can Manny hold. I mean, when he got hurt with Antonio Margarito, if you really watch that, he was a little confused, but he used his legs. He was smart enough to circle the ring to give himself some time to kind of recoup, you know, that
yeah.
Mosley could hurt him mm-hmm. and grab him. The only thing that I have a question about is if Mosley hurts him, if he can get him hurt and holds him, that allows Manny to recoup because Manny will hold. You know what I mean? I think that's the first reaction. I may be wrong, but if you hurt me and you grab me, I'm going to be like, oh, shit, my first reaction is to grab hold of you for dear life.
Well, Manny's always been a kind of a guy that when you hit him, if you get him flush, he'll come back and hit you three or four times. And if he's hurt, he kind of does the same thing. Either he kind of, you know, will try to wheel out of there, or he'll come back with a bunch of punches. He's not a hold-on guy and survive kind of guy. I think he's just, his natural instinct is to attack, especially when wounded. So I think that could be, you know, Shane's good chance, is that if he is able to stun Manny just a little bit and get him to be overly aggressive while he's, you know, a little bit hurt, that's really the best chance Shane has. But, you know, as far as my take on the fight, and really, you know, looking back at Kareem and your question there, it took me a few camps of watching Manny spar to figure out exactly how it is that they spar. I don't know if they necessarily explain to the sparring partners, I'd have to ask Freddie this, what it is they're working on. More often than not, they're telling them what they're not working on, which is, you know, stop holding so much. And there was a kid, I forget his name, something Robinson, that was holding way too much. There was no offense, and he just kept tying up and tying up, and they eventually let him go. They were just like, you know, you're just not ready to be in there with Manny, and you're certainly not giving us the look that we want. And it was for the De La Hoya camp. Maybe with Kareem, you know, he doesn't quite understand that Manny, they work on one or two specific things based on what Freddie's seen on the tape of the fighter they're facing. And that's kind of all they work on. And it's, you know, they'll slowly work on one routine, then they'll work on another routine, and it all becomes kind of, you know, several pieces of a larger puzzle. And I wonder if Kareem, you know, them thinking, well, I'm roughing him up or I'm doing this, people are interpreting that as, you know, he's getting the better of Manny. But you have to remember that sparring is not fighting. You're working on specific things. And so just because a guy got the better of you in sparring, you might have been working on something other than what he was trying to do. And so, okay, there's a perception there. But, it's, you know, if Manny was unleashed, I've seen Kareem Mayfield fight, and I've seen him, you know, in the gym working. You know, to me, if you unleashed Manny, it's just no question who's the better fighter and who would really be getting the better of who, you know, just from experience and athleticism and all the things that Manny brings to the table and all the things that Kareem doesn't quite bring to the table. So I think maybe people – there's no story here with this fight. If you really look at it, either guy is very interesting. You can't play the Manny's distracted card. They're not even really bringing up how dangerous Shane Mosley is. They're kind of trying to bring that up. We're asking – that was my question to Freddie, was like, look, I'm not even going to look for an angle here. You know, I just wanted the straight story from you. What's the storyline of this camp? And he said, you know, there really isn't one. It's been so good, it's been boring. And I just think I'm going to go with the chalk on this. I'm picking Manny to win. He might even stop Shane. Although what I think is that he's going to hurt him a little bit, not be able to get him out of there, and we're going to kind of see, you know, just a slow dance to the 12-round bell.
I don't know yet. I'm gonna think about it just for a few seconds, Chris, before I tell
you
what I think.
The hype.
You know,
I have a question. If Manny does win, I've been reading online that he might be able to fight Marquez possibly next. I'm not sure how true that is, but that's what I read. If he gets past Mosley, it could be a fall fight with Marquez for a third time.
You know,
yeah,
I've been hearing about that too. Whether or not how serious it is, I don't know yet. I mean, Gabe, I don't know how much you've got info about that, but.
All I've got, you know, really is, I don't know if you were on the conference call yesterday, Dave, but
yeah, I was.
Basically, Bob was asked about it, and he just said, look, you guys, you know, take what Richard Schaefer says as gospel, write what you want to write. He kind of didn't really confirm it, didn't really deny it. And Richard Schaefer is really the one that keeps saying, you know, there's an offer on the table. There was another article, I think, today that said they pushed back the date and added some stipulations to it. I think it's just really early right now, and maybe
I think the bottom line is
too.
I think Gable too. The bottom line is too is that Manny and his whole camp, they don't need to be in a rush of who they're going to pick and choose they're going to fight next. I mean, they have their pick of the crops of taking their time who they can fight. It's not a question who's going to get in the ring with them. There's a lot of folks that want to get in the ring with them. So I understand where Bob Arum is coming from. It's like, hey, there's no need for us to talk about contracts or who we're going to fight next. It's going to be there, you know.
There's a thing where, you know, he's under contract, apparently, I think until next year with Golden Boy, Marquez. And
right.
Maybe this is just the way, you know, there's the Cold War going on. Maybe this is just a way they leak some information, kind of turn Marquez's head a little bit as he's still renegotiating with Golden Boy, and kind of just, you know, screwing over the opponent or your enemy just a little bit. You know, it could have just been that, because it's interesting that that Golden Boy would say, we have an offer from Top Rank, and then you go back to Top Rank, and they're like, we got a fight that we're promoting on May 7th. What are you guys talking about? You know, where did this offer come from? You know, it's a really weird little situation. And still can't get a straight story on is Marquez under contract? Is he not under contract? You know, do they just have options on him? That whole situation is just odd. And, you know,
right.
Bob Arum's one of the great game players, and I tend to think that's what it is that he's playing some games and having a good time with Golden Boy, and you know, meanwhile they're trying to figure out and you know, what they're going to do and try to maintain some sort of leverage in all of this. Because Lord knows they'll take that fight in a heartbeat, you know, but whether or not that fight is really there for them, who knows? You know,
right.
I have no idea.
You know, we got
to
call
like
in our next. We got to call in our next guest, Chris. I'm going to put you on hold. Don't hang up, because I still want to continue talking about this, because I do see other callers that want to talk about the Mosley and Pacquiao fight and what is next if Pacquiao is successful over Shane Mosley. So stay on hold really quick while I patch in, or call in, rather that fact, Frankie into the show here. Let's see if he answers. I know he...
Se ha comunicado con...
La Hora Coronel.
I don't think that's him there, Gabriel.
It is Falun. No. I just said, I want to see that fight, but I want to see that fight at 140, not at welterweight. You know, 140 is my threshold for it, because I don't even know if Marquez would be good at 140. You know, but anything above that, who cares at this point?
Yeah.
He's not
a
welterweight.
I'm not, you know, man. I'm just not excited about any of the picks that, you know, Mosley here. I'm just, you know what, guys, I hate to say it. I'm not really pumped up about it at all. Marquez at 147, even at 140, I'm still not excited about it, because, you know, I mean, it's just, I think it's kind of long overdue. And Marquez is really, in my opinion, is not a shell of himself. He's still a fighting rooster, but he's a beat up fighting rooster, you know?
Yeah.
And there's plenty of other names out there that are kind of making some noise in their own right that should have the right to kind of get a shot at Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather if he makes his comeback in retirement from retirement. But Marquez, I think Marquez needs to do exactly what these other stars have done for him, which is give the other guys that are trying to come up a chance as well, you know, and just let go of this dream of Pacquiao, in my opinion. But hey.
Yeah, you know, it's the thing. Pacquiao. I just look at it. You know, I think the last fight I covered of his live was the Cotto fight, and it was probably the last fight of his that I cared about. Beyond that, you know, it's just like the Margarito thing. I was like, not really that excited by it. Claudia was not excited by it. And now, you know, we got this fight, and I couldn't be less excited about it. I mean, as much as I like Shane Mosley and loved him over the years, I just look at this as a fight that doesn't really mean a lot. And it may not be that good the way Shane Mosley looked. I mean, maybe he'll have some action, and I'd rather be pleasantly surprised than kind of overhype it and say, this is going to be a great fight. You know, I was credentialed for this fight. I could be ringside, and I chose to pass it on to one of our other riders and say, why don't you go? I've seen Manny like 6 times, next time I see him, I'd rather see him in a good fight, you know?
I don't think we're ever going to see that anymore. Honestly, I'm done saying that he should fight this person. Manny, just keep doing what you're doing. Make your money, brother. That's what I say. You know, I think he's now at that point of his career where he could do basically anything, and it's not going to be any wrong to his fans and to the casual fans, because he's able to fill up their. I mean, I'm hearing that it's sold out, you know, for Mosley, and I can look in the chat room, I can look at Twitter, Facebook, whatever the thing is, forums, is there's not a whole lot of talk about it, except for Manny's going to knock him out, you know. Why is Shane fighting him? Why is Shane fighting? Why is an old man? I mean, there's more talk of Marquez. I mean, that's the thing, too, that I had a chance to talk to one of our writers, Saul, from Leaving the Ring, and I said, have you noticed that there is more mention of Marquez than Mosley? Like, Mosley's kind of been X'd out of the equation of that he's going to be fighting May 7th against Manny Pacquiao. More people are talking about, hey, when should Marquez fight Pacquiao? Or when should, you know, is that his next fight? I mean, that's how bad that we're kind of disrespecting a living legend, Sugar Shane Mosley, that we're not even giving him any credit of maybe he may pull the ultra upset of the year and stop Manny Pacquiao. I mean, it's a really slim chance, but I don't think a lot of us are – even when he was going to fight Margarito, I think that there was more talk about it because we all kind of – I think everybody went in looking to see, you know, Mosley getting stopped by a tornado, but everybody's not even kind of concerned about seeing him getting in with a guy that's really honestly is a tornado in the ring, you know, Manny Pacquiao. A guy throws volumes and volumes of punches, hard punches, not a one-punch knockout artist. So he's a guy that's just going to continually land punches on you and move and give you angles, you know, which Shane has had problems with in the past, angles and speed.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever really seen him take on a fast guy that he didn't have troubles with. You know, I mean, everybody has troubles with speed. I always kind of laugh when people go, well, you know, just this guy, you know, movement's really going to trouble him. And the guys with good defense and with power and speed, I'm like, who doesn't have a hard time with guys like that, you know? But I just look at Shane and, you know, there was an argument, I even kind of put it forth before I heard Top Rank kind of use it, was that, you know, Mayweather and Mora were guys that are defensive styles, you know? They're harder to deal with. They're going to slide around the ring a little bit or a lot in some cases. And, you know, Mora really didn't want to engage in anything more than clinches and things like that. But, you know, and so because Manny is more of an aggressive guy by nature, this could be a really good fight. But you really look at Shane and just the way he was kind of shaking his arms and just kind of slow to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
He just didn't look good. You know, the reflexes didn't look good. The balance didn't look good. He didn't look like he could really pull the trigger. To me, you know, why is this a compelling fight? And that was my number one question to all three of them, Bob Arum, Freddie, and Manny, was what does this fight actually mean? You know, what is the point of fighting a guy that looked like crap in his last two fights? And, you know, Bob...
Means I beat up a legend fighter and I put him in retirement. That's what it means, Gabriel. Stop asking so many questions.
I like to make the people happy. I like to be in good fight with people. You know, I haven't transcribed it all, but that was pretty much the gist of it. And with Freddie, it was like, well, you know, this is who they pick, and, you know, we decided to take the fight.
It's become so comical. Now, even on that conference call, which I got on and I just wanted to hear. I wasn't going to ask any questions. I just wanted to hear what people had to say because, you know, you can't ask them a real serious question. Neither one of the guys, not even Freddie anymore. Freddie seems to get really upset when you do ask him something that's kind of not even negative, but of truth, right? And everybody's question was, you know, how does it feel to be part of Nike? How does it feel to be Manny Pacquiao? How does it feel to be having a new album? It's just like, I was like, man, is this a boxing press conference call? Or not one of them were talked about his sparring. Hey, I wanted to know about Creed Mayfield, about the holding. You know, why was he told to kind of settle down on that? I mean, there was things that I literally wanted to hear. And more or less, it was like, you know, how does it feel to work with a Hall of Famer like Bob Arum? Dude, you know how many times we've heard this in every Manny Pacquiao conference call? It's like, come up with something different, guys. I mean, why are we calling it a press conference call? Why don't we just call it a kiss-ass call?
Seriously, even Bob is like, this is insufferable. And he's sitting there trying to sell it, you know?
Yeah, no, he said at the end, okay, he goes, okay, that's enough. Let's end this here. You know, I mean, I think the guy's done with seeing people with so many brown noses around him already, you know? Let's pass it to some other fight fans because I'm still waiting on other things here that we're supposed to do. We were supposed to have Frankie on, and I don't know what's going on here. They gave me a number. I tried it. That number wasn't right. So let's see. Hey, Carcino's on hold right now. What's up, brother? What's on your mind? You're on live right now and leave it in the ring.
Oh, man, you guys are sounding like me. I'm like, wow, you guys are – I'm rubbing off on you guys.
Is that right? What's going on, man?
Nothing too much. No, I was waiting on you guys to talk about the Vic Darchinian fight, but yeah, I agree with you guys 100%, and I'm like almost stunned that we're all in agreement on this. on this subject, and it's not really hating on Manny Pacquiao. It's just that this fight is really a lose-lose for him. It's like if you beat Shane Mosley, say you knock him out in the first round, what does that prove? You've done nothing. It just really takes away. Everybody says it just proves the theory. Like, okay, yeah, he was done. We knew it was just one fight away. So
right.
Let's say you do beat him worse than Mayweather. You know, from worse to where, we think Sergio Martinez would have done the same job on Shane Mosley.
You know, the thing is, Carcino, is that when you say it's a lose-lose situation, in all honesty, it isn't a lose-lose situation for Manny or Bob because they bank on the lose situation regardless. You know what I mean? It's a lose situation for fans to find out or to get not find out. You're not going to find out if he's great. You're not going to find out if this guy can fight. We all know that already. He's great and he can fight. But we're basically buying into something that you're not going to get any entertainment value except to see one guy throw punches and the other guy not being able to pull the trigger. You know what I mean? And that's where I kind of fall back and go, okay, is that good TV or are we watching some type of snuff film here? You know?
Well, at the same time, you know, but if it's a good fight and say they are right that the styles do match and Shane is able to bring something to the table that he didn't bring against the other defensive styles, because let's be honest, you know, other fighters, you know, not looking good against Floyd Mayweather or even Sergio Mora is not an uncommon thing. I can't think of anybody that looked aesthetically pleasing fighting Sergio Mora or had all of their offense fighting fighting Floyd Mayweather. You know, Zab looked good for the first four rounds and then his offense disappeared. That's pretty much par for the course. With Manny, you know, even Margarito was in that fight late, going to his body, hurting him.
Right.
You know, so it's possible in this fight that what we could get is an entertaining fight between a faded guy and, you know, a guy that's not exactly young himself and Manny, you know. So at that point, if it's entertaining, then everybody kind of wins because a good fight is a good fight, regardless of how we want to compare it and bring it into the Floyd versus Manny and, you know, this and that, whoop-de-woo, that whole argument. Regardless of that whole argument, if it's a good fight and it's entertaining, we all win. But if it's crap like Dave just described, you know, then it's exactly what we said it was before, which is just a cash grab and no one cares.
And I got to tell you this. I got to tell you guys this. I hope it's not a snuff film. You know what I mean? I hope it's going to be competitive. And you know, like I said, it's really sad to see a lot of people count out Shane Mosley like that and kind of really look past him. The only people that are not looking past him is him and his team. I'm not even sure if his team is looking past that. His team may be looking and going, yeah, Shane, you look good. Yeah, man, this motherfucker is going to get knocked out. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm not really sure. You know what I mean? But I'm hoping, just like, you know, Eric Morales, how wrong we were about that Shane comes and proves us, not wrong, but proves us that, hey, you know what, there was something left there. There was enough to be competitive about. We never know. I mean, Manny may decide to make it competitive, you know, because the story is Manny likes to let himself get hit, and he does particular things because he wants to entertain. How much truth is that? I don't believe it, but millions of people seem to believe it. You know what I mean? And if he decides to make that choice, hey, it only makes it more of a possibility of Mosley catching that upset or making it just the value of entertainment. Listen, really quick, Garcia, I'm going to put you on hold because they're giving me another number. I got to pass in this other guy because we have tons of guests that are going to be calling in a minute. So stay on hold, brother. We'll talk about Vic Darchinian because I do want to talk to Yanni about the Yanni Perez fight. I don't know, man. I think Yanni may have to hang up them gloves. It didn't look too good in that last fight he was in this past Saturday night on Showtime. Let me put him on hold.
No, man. Have we heard him?
No, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I thought he looked dead on his feet, man. You know, he just he looked sluggish. It's kind of like, you know, what I said coming into the fight, that he'd had like five or six, you know, really tough fights heading into this bout. And, you know, Vic has had some tough fights too. He's not, you know, he's not a young fighter either. He's 35.
No.
He's older. But his style with that kind of power, you haven't really seen him take a lot of beatings, whereas Donnie's always had to get right in the kitchen, throw a bunch of punches, and thus take a lot of punches. Plus, staying at that weight all the time and training at that weight all the time, he's always only like a few pounds off of it, you know, when he's in training camp. I think that drained a lot out of him. And, you know,
right.
There was a lot of whispers from kind of everybody around his camp that this would probably be the last fight, you know, that he just didn't look like he had it. The balance wasn't there, or the legs were kind of shot. Now the ability to take a punch isn't exactly the best because he had a really good chin before. You know, it just seemed like he got stunned a bunch of times. And I know there's a lot of people that want to say, well, he quit because he didn't look, you know, he didn't get all upset and scream and yell, I want to continue after that cut. Well, then you just don't know Yanni Perez. He's not that
right.
kind of guy.
Definitely.
He's a soft-spoken, very quiet.
Hold on,
man.
Gabe. Hold that thought just for 1 minute. Let me see. Do I have Frankie or Marcos on the line with us?
I'm Marcos. How you doing, man?
Marcos, ¿qué pasó? How you doing, brother?
What's up? Pretty good, man. How you been?
Hey, good. I appreciate it. I appreciate you calling in. Hey, the number that Red gave me for Frankie, it's not working. It's a woman.
Nah, he's calling right now. He's just calling in. I just talked to him right now. I think he's just calling in right now.
Okay. You know what? He hasn't called in yet, so we're waiting for. But hey, first off, congratulations! I heard he was with you, and you were helping him out, training him, Frankie, against his fight that happened this, I believe, this past Saturday on Azteca Box, right?
Yeah, we did. He came down to train with me, man. We had a good training camp. Trying to work with him, teaching some different stuff that he usually does, and it didn't work out the way we planned it, the way we practiced it. And also, Randy, you know, had a lot of speed and helped him out in sparring. So that helped a lot, too.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the thing is that, you know, when Red called me up and let me know that you had him in training camp, you know Red, how he talks so fast sometimes that I think he gets things backwards. So he was.
I know that.
He was telling me you had the guy that lost, right? And then I was like, you know, I had so many things going on. So I call him Gabriel, and I tell Gabriel, right, Gabe? And then Gabe goes, well, that's not too good. Why do we want the loser on the show?
No. It was Frankie, man. We have Frankie. Like I said, we've been working with him. I trained him before when he first started his career. And you know what? He's calling me on the other line, but I can't. I don't know. I'm going to hold on for a second, see if I can tell him to call you right now, because he's trying to call you guys.
Yeah, please do. Tell him to call in, and we'll patch him in right away.
Let me do this real quick. I'll call you right back. That way we can keep on talking. I want him to on the line so you can talk to him. He speaks English, too.
Okay.
So let me call him real quick right now.
Okay. You know, I didn't have a chance to catch it live. I don't know if you had a chance to catch that fight live, Dave. I mean, Gabe. I'm going to call myself.
I watched it today, actually, yeah. Yeah. I watched it. It's a good fight, you know.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, it was a really competitive, and it was just. I'm really curious for him when it really started to turn, because I mean, obviously, you know, the dude got cut, you know, Marroquin, and he got really, you know, banged up and swollen, and you know, just looking at it on tape, though, looking at like the tail of the tape, you know, Francisco was the smaller guy, had the shorter reach, had losses, you know, and a lot of guys were saying like he's not. He's kind of an ordinary, you know, fighter. You know, he's kind of just got a strong work ethic. He'll come forward. He's aggressive. But there's not a lot else going on there. But looking at Marroquin's punches versus his punches, Marroquin just looks almost like an amateur, you know. And I saw this in the last fight. But, you know, he meets the target, and it's kind of flashy. And but there's not, like, he's not laying a hurt on you. Whereas you look at Francisco's punches, and they're very professional-level punches, that maybe he doesn't have a lot of natural power, but when he hits you, he's trying to shoot through that target and put some hurt on you. And I thought that was just absolutely the difference in the fight. One guy had substance to his punches, the other guy didn't. And ultimately, in the long haul, that substance took a toll.
You know, yeah, Marroquin, to me, I mean, in the beginning, he looked like he had it all together, but Francisco just seemed to be the sharper guy, the more focused guy out of the two, you know, I mean, you know, the first one or two rounds, I don't know, Gabe, if you got it, but I thought they were kind of even. They were kind of evenly out and stuff. Marcos, you back on the line?
Yeah, I'm back on the line. Yeah, I just gave him the number. He has the one number wrong. Yeah, we're back
okay.
in.
Okay, perfect. You know, we're talking about that fight here, and, you know, Marroquin came in, and he looked like he had it all together here, you know, Marcos. I mean, he looked like he was going to be competitive, but it seemed like right after the second or the third round, I could be wrong, it looked like that's when he kind of more or less started falling apart, I mean, with Frankie. Did I see that right?
Yeah. Well, it was exactly what happened. First the second round, I gave it to Marroquin, but I know I told him at the beginning, experience going to start kicking in sooner or later. Why didn't he feel the punch? I mean, he comes from Mexico. Those guys that can punch. If you stay inside of the fighter from over there, you're in the danger. That's what I've been teaching my fighters. If you stay in front of them, you're going to catch you sooner or later. So what I told Frank, we're going to do something different. We're going to start using move side to side, work straight punches to the, you know, do not stay in front of him because he's good strong inside. But it seemed to work out. He did remember my instructions. It did work out good for him.
Let me put in Frankie over here. Congratulations, Francisco. Welcome to the show, brother. And, hey, what a good win for you.
All right. Thank you, man. Thank you for the help. Thank you for this interview. And thanks to all the people that are on the way. Thank you to Caballero.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you, how much was Randy Caballero and his father, Marcos, a key point for your win over Marroquin on Saturday night?
No, no, it's a good thing because Randy Caballero is too fast, and Marcos Caballero is a great trainer. Too bad he's not in the corner, but we train very hard for this fight.
Hey, Marcos, let me ask you, why weren't you able to go out there? It was in, what, Oklahoma or something?
Yeah, well, the thing is, I didn't want to spend any more money. We had a thing for Randy right here. We had an interview we had to do with Randy. So I told him, you know, be okay. I mean, I'll stay. He goes, well, his uncles can work the corner good. So I wanted to go, and believe me, it was a good feeling for me to watch the fight. I wasn't be able to go, and it was a great feeling. But they did a good job also, you know. I did my job, and he put it together at home. Once in the ring, you're going to do your stuff anyway. So it did work out good. I'm happy for that.
Right, absolutely. Let me introduce my co-host, Gable Montoya from Max Boxing. Gable, you got any questions for Marcos or Frankie?
Yeah, I do, actually. You know, congratulations, Francisco, by the way. It was a hell of a fight. I finally got to see it today, and it was really entertaining. It was nice to see a guy, you know, the underdog, come out with a win. I'm curious for you, you know, early on, it seemed like the speed and the movement of Marroquin was a problem. But then in the middle of the fight, you began to really kind of dig in and turn things around. Can you talk about what it was that turned the fight around for you? What you thought it was? Was it the body work or what?
I think I had more experience than him. I already went to 12 rounds, and I think that's about it because I make a lot of rounds.
Well, Frank, you know, when you're with a certain training camp and you kind of become comfortable with them, okay, having Marcos on your corner giving you instructions and having particular people surrounding you, you kind of adapt to that. But then when you have to leave and you got to take another corner, even though I don't know if that corner's been with you from the beginning with Marcos, but does that make you any nervous, or you just kind of zone out and stay focused on what's going to be in front of you?
No, I'm just going to stay the same focus, see what's going to happen for me, better fights. And, you know, Marcos is a good trainer, and that's about it. I'm going to still train with him, and I got my uncles in the corner too. So thank you to Marcos, because he's a hell of a trainer.
Yeah, well, basically what we did is with me and Frankie, you know, like I said, I trained before. So it was good. I kind of knew how he fights. And I seen him fight in Mexico. So I tried, like I told you guys, I tried to make a little change on him. And it seems I teach him different stuff. And in the style of the United States compared to Mexico is totally different. And I know this kid from the amateurs, the one with Randy, Marcos went with Randy to Turkey. And I kind of knew his style similar to Randy. So I kind of, you know, worked with him, and it seemed to work out perfect for us, man. It worked out beautiful. I mean, we won clearly. It was an exciting fight. And things are opening up for this kid, man. I wish him the best for him because he's a great fighter. He's a great fighter. I know since he was little.
Where does things go from here now?
Well, we're going to talk right now. We talked to trying to get a manager. There's a guy already. We're going to have a meeting coming up next week. And we'll sit down and see if trying to open the doors for Frankie. I think Frankie's ready for a championship. He always takes one of the toughest fighters out there, Caballero. And, I mean, it was a good fight. I think it will open the doors for him now. get a manager, get a promoter, something, he can run his career the proper way that he needs it. And I think he has the potential to do it. He has all the potential to become a world champion. And he proved it on this fight that he has it. So, you know, we've still got to work on some things. Hopefully put it together, and then we'll be okay from there.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Gabe.
I'm just I'm curious, too. You know, the fight was tough all the way down the wire, you know, and you pulled out a close decision. Did you think you were able to get a decision? Did you feel like you needed to knock him out late? What were your thoughts heading down the stretch? Because it would seem like it was anybody's fight at that point.
Frankie, I was confident. You know, the preparation we have with over there in Coachella and everything. I'm on a different, you know, I have a kid right now, so I think I have to win. I have everything, and I was fighting in his hometown and everything, but I think I made a good fight, and, you know, the people is the one who win.
Yeah, it was a good fight. Yeah, it was a really good fight, man. And, you know, well, congratulations again, guys. I mean, I really appreciate you guys taking your time. And, Frankie, keep doing what you got to do, and hopefully you get a title shot. And, you know, you keep striving and trying to reach those goals that you're trying to reach. Hey, Marcos, again, brother, thank you. And, hey, Marcos, don't forget to give me a call over the weekend. We need to chop it up about those things we talked about.
No problem. Anytime, man. Ready to go.
All right.
Talk to the Reds. All right.
I will.
Thank you,
man.
Thank you.
All right, Frankie.
Guys,
congratulations. Bye-bye. Thank you. All right. You know, good guy, man, Marcos Caballero, who's the father of Randy Caballero, man. He looks like he's going to be a world champion. He's going to be fighting this next week, Friday night, in Indio, California, at Fantasy Springs on Solo Book Sale. If you haven't had a chance to check out that kid, he's explosive. He's definitely being groomed to be a champion. He's got a lot of confidence. He's been on the show numerous times, and his dad's world-class, man. I mean, he's a good trainer. And, you know, there's a lot of rumors happening kind of surrounding Indio, California right now here, Gabriel. I mean, should we let some of the cats out of the bag here when it comes to talking about rumors in the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. We talked about this before. Yeah, little rip, Dave. I'm taking some heat, apparently, for my article today. Apparently Golden Boy was not happy with what I wrote. I'm packing up my bag, heading over to the Fight Night Club here in a little bit. And this should be an interesting evening. If you never hear from me again, you have an idea of who to track down.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I don't know. There's a couple of people out there that want to put you in the back of a trunk and drive off over there to the desert of Victorville. You know,
a lot of holes in that desert. Yeah.
Good thing is that. Hey, the good thing is that you're gonna recognize the desert when we drive over there, because we've been there, you know, a few times to Victorville. You're gonna be like, hey, this looks familiar. Hey, the fight ranch is out here. Well, you know,
Gabe
is buried
just over that fence.
there was my co-host right over that fence. There, you know, was a good guy, man, but just didn't seem to know to not let his fingers do too much talking on the typewriter there. But, you know, there's rumors out there right now that James Kirtland, you know, Mr. Mandingo himself, who had an upset against Ishida, there's talks about him possibly moving down to Indio, California, and getting in cahoots with Joel Diaz, is the head trainer of Timothy Bradley. And, you know, I believe he's helping out his kid brother, Julio Diaz. You know, I like that matchup. I hope that rumor there is more truth than rumor at all, because you know, the temperament of Joel Diaz, and it's kind of a secluded area. I mean, there's not a whole lot over there. I mean, you got Palm Springs and stuff, but, you know, the rumors is that, you know, this is not even a rumor. The weaknesses of a lot of fighters is that they're so secluded at times that when you let them out, it's like having that cat, you know, a house cat just kind of caves into the house, and all he has is the running room of a laundry room, which is going to be a 5x3 little room, and you got washer and dryer in the way. When you finally let him out, that cat's going to go wild. And that's what how a lot of fighters are. You know, when they finally are let out and they're making some money and they're getting the recognition that they've kind of kind of, you know, wanted to soak into that they drench themselves with it so much that they don't kind of see what's ahead of themselves, and they kind of lose themselves in this whole atmosphere of publicity. And then you kind of see them fall from exactly what they were trying to get themselves to a certain point at a certain pinnacle that point is no longer there because they're so soaked up, it's too heavy for them to walk forward, you know? So that's kind of what happened with Kurt Lynn. I know a lot of people have their assumptions or their theories of what happened to James Kirtland, but I think there was a lot of stuff that came into play. If you look at it, I mean, a kid fought five times within
three times within 5 weeks span.
There you go.
Span.
Yeah. It was just crazy. I mean, you know, you can argue that, well, fighters did it back in those days, but it's just a whole can of worms that we opened up in the first show. But the thing is that he needs somebody that can really ground him, you know, and having like a world champion like Timothy Bradley, who's more of a grounded person, a religious guy, who becomes vegan at sometimes when he's in his training camp, and Joel Diaz, who's more of a guy that has all his bearings and understands the fight game, because he's with a fight family, you know, he's a fight family guy and surrounds himself with just everything that you could possibly, every four corners is just going to be about boxing. And not say that his last trainer of Kirtland was not doing the same thing, but there was certainly distraction, you know what I mean?
Well, here's the thing, you know, and I spoke about this. I broke it briefly on Twitter, and you and I have talked about this at length already.
Right.
I'd spoken to one of James's managers, and this is what they mentioned, and it's very tentative beginnings to this change. I mean, they still got to file the paperwork to move his probation from Vegas. Now, he moved from Austin now to Vegas, and then they want to move him to Palm Springs, where there's kind of nothing to do but train. You know, I mean, there's certain trouble. You can get in trouble anywhere if you really work hard enough. But
right,
they're feeling, you know, not to totally throw candy under the bus, but just giving you one example of how things weren't quite going the way they should have. In 5 weeks of training, James sparred 25 rounds. Under Ann Wolfe, when he used to train, he would spar 40 rounds a week. That kind of shows you the level of physical training that he wants, that he's used to, and that he really needs as a fighter, and particularly to get back into shape. I mean, maybe 40 rounds a week is excessive. I mean, they would use like 18 to 20-ounce gloves, so you could spar every day and not take too much damage, but you could still go through the rudiments of fighting every day. That was just one thing, you know, they would have James come in like to train around noon. Sometimes that would change, and they would work for like an hour and a half. His previous regiment was waking up 6:30 in the morning, and his running wouldn't finish till 8:30. Then he'd rest. Then he'd run some more, doing like kind of calisthenic running, or like running up and down stairs at UTEC, and then or University of Texas. And then after that, at 4:30, he'd begin sparring. That was the kind of regiment that she had him on. And that's what James is looking for, putting him in with a guy like, you know, Tim Bradley's trainer, Joel Diaz, who will put him through that kind of regimen. Tim's a beast in the gym, and they try all different kinds of scenarios. They're very creative in their training. Looking at Tim's shape, just his body, you know the dude's in shape, and he works very hard. And plus putting him next to Tim and his dad, who were ex-military guys, very disciplined, very family-oriented, like you're saying, it's just the right environment for him, you know. And Tim and James go back to the amateurs. Apparently, they were friends
right there.
So, again, it's a tentative deal. I don't think all of it's been worked out yet, but that was what was on the table yesterday. I think it was up to James to pull the trigger on it, and they hope that he does. As for a reconciliation with Ann Wolfe, this is not going to happen.
Yeah, I know a lot of people want that, and it's just not going to happen. I think Ann Wolfe is just one of those type of people, which gives her all the right to
actually, no, it's not on her side. The door is open on her side. It's on James' side.
Oh, really?
Side. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. The door is open on Ann's side. James is not interested.
What the?
That's from what I understand. And that's really all I can get into, because that's really all they'll say.
Right.
You know? Between James and the managers and Ann, respectfully, that's all they'll say.
You know what, though? I mean, you know, as much as we've had a chance to speak to James, and, you know, and I think that the door's open with her, which is great to hear, and the doors are not open with him because you got to remember, too. I mean, he said, hey, listen, she didn't even come and visit me. Like, I don't even know. I mean, I'm out, and I still haven't heard from her. I think that there's a little bit of I'm hurt. I'm in a hurt factor right now, you know.
It could be also tough love. I mean, you got to remember that this is the second time he went to jail.
Right.
It took a long time. He was like 11-0, I think 12-0 when he went to jail the first time. It took him like I think 8 to 12 fights to get him back to the level that he ended up at, and then he went to jail on the verge of a title shot. She visited him for the first 2 months and then stopped, and that he told me on the record. He didn't say why she stopped. He didn't say why he was mad at her about it. Something happened in that last visit. Something was said. It would just be a guess on my part that she was saying, look, you're on your own or you're not repentant or something. Something happened there. She stopped visiting and they haven't spoken since.
Yeah.
That's basically where it's at. And maybe it's her saying you're on your own. You got to fucking figure this out yourself. I really don't know. It's all speculation. I think kind of along the lines of what you're saying, though, is he's kind of hurt or felt abandoned, He's kind of alluded to that, I found out who my friends are, that kind of talk. I just don't know, and I kind of, it's a tough line for me because I've covered them both extensively, for a number of years. And so I kind of just want to respect the fact that rather than be a reporter and kind of pry and try to get it out of them in bits and pieces, they both say they don't want to talk about it. I just kind of go, okay, obviously it's a personal thing because he praises her professionally, says she was fantastic and shit, she got him to 25-0. I don't see what the problem is, but so it must be personal,
Yeah. No, I think it is personal in his end and both ends. I mean, there's a lot more to the story than what we know about, and we're only going to hear assumptions and little bits of the story, and we're just going to have to put the pieces and the puzzle together and then kind of stew up what we think might have happened. But, the thing is that he does have to move forward. I've heard there is some talk of Vic D'Artagnan possibly heading out to Indio, California himself and getting with Joel Diaz, who at one time was helping and training out Adner Morris, but something happened there along the line where Adner Morris left Joel Diaz to go with Clemente, who was the trainer of Alfredo Angulo, El Perro, which we're going to change his name to Bigfoot because we haven't seen him. There's been sightings of Angulo, but nobody has been able to capture a picture or a film of my friend Alfredo Angulo.
Like a pond in the woods, and then you get near him in Mexicali, and he just runs off and disappears.
No, you just see him kind of run across the street, when you're driving in the mountains of Mexico, and he's like, that looked like a perro. No, that wasn't a perro. It was. Take a picture, and he's gone. He's gone. He's ready in the shrubs and the bushes. You can't see him anymore, But Vic D'Artagnan's going over there, which would make it an interesting story because the fact that he is what a jerk, But make it an interesting story. Let's get serious here, Gabe. We're live right now. Joke off the show, but it makes it interesting. Let me tell you why. Because the fact that Morris left Joel Diaz, Joel Diaz, Joel Diaz, these guys have their names so similar, they're brothers. I hate when they do that, Joel Diaz, and there was really nothing reported or even said from both camps of why they separated. But you kind of hear a little bit that not Joel is upset, but more or less he was hurt. Because I think even having a chance to speak to him, he really didn't even understand him leaving. He didn't even know about it. That's how it kind of came down to of how the sense that I got from him was I didn't even know he left me until it was reported, And now Vic, who's been hooting and hollering about having a possible rematch with Morris, is saying, hey, I'm going to go down there and work with the guy that taught him the tricks in the bag and learn those tricks so that I can add it to my arsenal so that I could beat this guy, And even though Vic, in his mind, he felt he won this fight, but he had everything against him when they have fought each other, I think he's being smart about it. He's like, hey, I'm going to go to another guy that can help me out. Luckily, Perez was a shell of himself coming in. He had no legs, like you mentioned earlier. The wars seem to have caught up with them. This is an older fighter. Perez is no spring chicken. He's an older rooster in the hen house. And you kind of saw that the feedings was just not there for him anymore. And, you know, he getting that cut above his eye, which was a bad cut, but a lot of people felt that he had a look of like, I don't want to continue. We don't really know. We can make our assumptions, but a face expression can say a thousand words. You know what I mean? And a lot of us are going to pick and choose that amount of words that we're going to take of the fight, you know. It was unfortunate. I thought we was going to, you know, be a good fight, but it just turned out to be a Vic Darchinian night, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was still, you know, I mean, it was one-sided, so it wasn't particularly exciting, you know.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a beating, and that's kind of, you know, kind of what I said it was going to be, and what I kind of hoped it wouldn't be, but Yanni just looked like he couldn't pull the trigger, and it was that kind of classic thing, the fight ends, he's like, I had him right where I wanted him, you know, I was just about to start doing good, you know, but I didn't really see that, you know, I mean, he's kind of a slow starter, but I mean, how slow are you going to start, you know, and you really look at it, the way they stopped it, I mean, if they hadn't, okay, he's got a cut on his head, he's been down, he just lost the fifth round, you know, it was kind of coming to a closer, you know, it was not looking like he was going to turn it around anytime soon. So now he's got to win all the rest of the rounds. He's already down that knockdown. So he's got to knock down Vic Darchinian also. They're kind of full even in the fight. And then, you know, he's probably got to knock him out to win. Was that going to happen? Did it have any chance of happening? I didn't see it. You know, maybe Vic would get really tired and just totally gas out and get stopped. But, I mean, there was nothing that that Yanni was doing that said that was going to happen. And Vic knows how to pace himself, and I think he'd have been fine. If anything, the fight would have devolved into a really boring fight where Vic was kind of hitting and moving. But, you know, we got what we got, and hopefully, you know, I kind of tend to agree with this. At first, I thought it was kind of harsh. Like, Steve brought it up on the show on the next round this week that we shouldn't wait around for Joseph Akpeko. Like, sorry you got hurt. It sucks. When you're ready to come back, come back. But I kind of want to see Darchinian and Modest again. And I think, you know, Modest, they were offered him Chris Avalos on that card. Personally, I would have taken that fight. I think he's so much better than Chris Avalos. He could have won that fight. They decided not to fight. I think rather than sit on the shelf for the longest, you know, I would, as soon as possible, it sounds like August, according to Steve's calculations and the schedule on Showtime, I'd make that fight. If, you know,
yeah,
if Perez couldn't, say by June, know that he was going to be back, I'd make that fight. I think it's a fan-friendly fight. It was good the first time. I think it would do great in Southern California. Put it at the Home Depot Center, and that'd be awesome, you know?
Well, the thing is, too, is Vic is selling that fight so well. You know what I mean? I mean, he's putting a lot into this fight that he's getting a lot of interest from fight fans. They're now basically saying, well, screw Akpeko. Hey, sorry about your illness and sorry what happened, but let's bring on Darchinian versus Morris too, you know, and have it at the Home Depot, you know, Home Depot, or have it at the Staples or wherever you want to put it at, you know, just have it in Southern California, you know. I definitely want to see it. I mean, even, you know, we don't know. It was such a, I don't know, you know what, that first fight was such a good fight. Would there be adjustments? I think there'd be some minor adjustments, but not a whole lot of adjustments. I think we're just going to see another good old-fashioned slugfest between the both of those two.
Yeah, I think so. I think Morris would probably pull the fight out a little bit better this time around. I think he would be, you know, all the experience that he's had in the last few fights, I think that would translate into this fight. And to me, I just think that he'd probably, you know, it might be tight early and Vic would be very aggressive looking for that knockout early. But I think once you get past that point, if you can handle the power and stay away from him a little bit more, you know, his Modest was knocked down early though the first time they met. I just think that he would be more prepared and he would know what to expect. And I think he would win a little easier, a little closer, or a little, you know, further away in the cards going away down the stretch. But, you know, we'll see. You know, hopefully
yeah,
we get it again because it was just a good fight the first time.
It was.
Vic had spent too much time looking at the ref. Should have been looking at Morris. But, you know, that kid is just deceptively nasty, you know. He looks like he should be just a pure boxer. Looks kind of like a kid. But he fits like a man. And he's not – he was unafraid to get in there and just do what he's got to do to win. And I just – I can't applaud that enough. It's exciting to watch, you know.
Yeah, definitely. You know, another news really quick, okay, Thompson Boxing Promotions, this Friday on April 29th, you know, we've talked about this Blood series of theirs, the New Blood at the Doubletree Hotel. If you're in Southern California, you want to take a chance to go check this out. I mean, they've been holding good cards after good cards. I mean, this card really is starting to kind of build up as a really good card that – it's kind of sad that you're not going to be able to see it live. You know, you end up seeing the telecast record after. But you got junior welterweight Mauricio El Maestro Herrera, who's going to be stepping in with the battle-tested veteran, Cristian Favelo. Okay, Favelo, to a lot of casual fans or even some newbies of boxing, don't really know a whole lot about Favelo. But this guy here is what you call a real road warrior. This guy doesn't care about who he fights. I mean, I think if you tell him, hey, listen, can you fight heavyweight? He'll be like, yeah, I don't care. You know, I'm a junior welterweight, but I could put some sand in my pockets and some sand in my shoes and a little bit of sand in my gloves and I can make, you know, a heavyweight. He'll fight. There's no doubt about him. There is no such thing as no or I don't think so when it comes to Cristian Favelo. This guy's all warrior, you know, and I'm kind of disappointed I'm not going to be able to go out there and check it out. But on the undercard, you're going to be able to see Jonathan
Arellano.
Yeah, Arellano, yeah. And he's going to be stepping in with a pretty good name. I'm trying to remember the name that he's going to be stepping in with, which was a guy that had a chance to fight Efren the last time of the series and gave Efren all he could run with in their fight. Wow, what was the name of the kid he's going to fight, Gable? You remember?
What's that? I'm sorry.
Who's going to be fighting Jonathan?
Oh, Sean Nichol.
Yeah, yeah. Woo. That's going to be a good fight for Jonathan. I mean, originally he had somebody else, but they fell off, and now he's going to be getting in with Nichol. I mean, you know what? A lot of people have been wondering about Jonathan. We had a chance to go down to go see Henry Ramirez and sit down with a couple of his fighters and watch him. And Jonathan had a lot of speed, and our question was, you know, which was Henry's, was how good is he? We know he's got the athleticism. You know he's got the talent, but how good is Little Thunder? And I think with Sean Nichol, you're going to find out how good he is. And it may be the mud may be a little bit thicker than what Jonathan was training for and wants to get in the mix with. You know, so this is a really good fight card, man, that Thompson Cards is putting together over there at the WB Hotel. Yeah.
That's the only thing, you know, is with Nichol, or however you say his name, it doesn't say how old he is, but he did get knocked out in February. It sounds like it was a competitive fight, you know, looking it up. He lost to an undefeated guy at the Doubletree in Ontario, you know, on a Thompson card. He's never been stopped before and is generally, you know, has a winning record, you know. He's 5-3, you know, no draws, 5 knockouts. So when he wins, he knocks you the hell out. And generally when he loses, you know, the majority decision losses. So he's a competitive guy. I wonder about the knockout. You know, it was a TKO, so, you know, I'm not really sure. I didn't see the fight. Haven't found a fight report on it or haven't talked to anybody that saw it. But, you know, it sounds like this will be that kind of developmental fight that should be a good fight. You know, it should be all action. Obviously, he's a competitive guy. He'll be in there. I was just wondering about, you know, going right back in a guy like this that had a knockout just back in February and then he returns. But, you know, we'll see, you know. And Arellano is a guy, he's only got one knockout, so it's not like he's got a ton of power. You're not putting him in with a total killer. You're putting him in with a guy that's a boxer. I think it's a solid card, you know. There is stuff, you know, speaking to the, you know, the heat that I'm taking about this, the gripe is that I only attacked a Golden Boy card and that I didn't go after the fights that are happening this weekend, you know, or happening tomorrow night, particularly like the top ranked card, because there are some kind of questionable matches that are happening on that card. You know, there's a guy that's on there that's 14-14, you know, fighting a 12-0 guy with 10 knockouts. that should be flagged, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them out there, and you know, I'm probably going to do one later on tonight. You know, after I get home from the fights, I'll probably do another mismatch report. It's something that I plan on doing pretty often. I'd planned on doing it sooner, but we got hit with all these fights. And, you know, my normal duties are, as I was hired to do, is to cover the fighters and kind of shore up what Steve doesn't get in terms of that. And so a lot of this stuff that's really kind of painstaking, a lot of the research, watching tape, talking to, you know, different matchmakers and different people, it takes time, you know, to put together something like that. You know, it took me a long time just to put together just the Golden Boy research that I did in this article. That's why I called it Volume 1. And I think Golden Boy bristles more than any other promoter that I can think of at criticism. They take it very personally. And apparently, you know, they're furious at me. And I'm gonna get it when I get to the arena tonight, and I can't wait because everything that I pointed out in the fights in that article is gonna happen tonight. I guarantee
well,
it. it's gonna be a night of knockouts. And you know I will flag this one. There's one that's borderline on Terry Lane's card. You know generally, I mean, if you want to just a quick look at it, go to BoxRec and you look at it, and it's kind of that's the beginning. That's the starting point. When you see a lot of red, particularly on a guy's record, and the other guy is pretty much undefeated or undefeated, and he's got a lot of knockouts, that's a fight that you want to take a look at. If a guy's got three reds in a row or four, sometimes
well,
five or six,
you know,
you
know, Gabe, you know, when you see a lot of red, there's only two things that you're going to either think about. Either, number one, it's that person's time of the month, or number two, it's a warning sign that this person shouldn't be in the ring, okay? And that's what it comes down to. I mean, listen, the truth hurts. It's always going to hurt, but we can't please everybody. You know, our job is to report and to analyze and to dish out and not be friends with the fighters. You know, we gather a certain relationship, of course, because we need contact and we need to have access to particular things so that we can report back on articles or on the radio show, because that's why people either log on to read or tune in and listen, you know. And, hey, more power to you that you stuck your guns and you put your foot down and you're taking a lot of heat, not just from Golden Boy but from the other circle around you. I applaud you. I say keep doing it. Hey, it sucks, but if you don't want to see somebody – putting the magnified glass on your fight card, well, give us better fights. You know what I mean? Have your matchmaker do a better job. You know, he may be getting a little lazy, and you might have to give him a pat in the ass and say, hey, get over there. What do you mean? This is your third lunch. What do you mean your homework's done? No. Get over there. That's what we're paying
exactly.
You the big bucks for. You know, but, hey, listen, let's go into our interviews. We had Victor Ortiz Vicious, the newly WBA champion who just dethroned Andre Berto, who's been really silent on Twitter lately. And he had a lot to say about Floyd, to Manny Pacquiao, about Brandon Rios, about Andre Berto, a rematch with Andre Berto that's been having rumors about. And then Orlando, who is his manager, he gets on and tells us a little bit of more. It kind of adds to what we had discussion with Victor Ortiz. So let's put that in, and then we'll be right back. And if you guys want to call in and add your 2 cents to the interviews of what Victor and Orlando had to say, you're more than welcome. Or if you want to add your 2 cents about anything we've been discussing here on Leaving the Ring, you can call us 347-215-7598. The people that are on hold, stay on hold, because you're going to want to hear this interview with Vicious Vic Ortiz.
Three hours of boxing time. Leave it in the ring. Leave it in the ring.
Let's see. You should answer right now.
Oh, you want to ask? Oh.
Yeah, Victor.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
Dude, I am shopping for some suits right now. Getting hooked up by, where is this? By Rick's?
Yeah,
Rick's Tailoring, bro, in Kansas. So they're hooking me up really nice. The suits that they picked out and helped me pick out are pretty awesome. I'm gonna look like really good. I'm almost gonna look like a gentleman, bro.
Well, I don't think there's any question you are,
man.
Doing.
I
I saw you at the fights on Saturday, man. I was going to suggest you need to get a new jacket there. You were busting out of it, dude. You were definitely a full welterweight, man.
I definitely am a full welterweight now, Dave.
Yeah, no, I could see that. You know, let's talk about that fight really quick because I know you're getting fitted over there. So let's just roll into the interview. You know, first off, man, congratulations. It was a very, very an impressive win. You know, I know a lot of media people didn't believe that you were going to take this. You know, I was one of the few that picked you to win the fight. And now that this is all done and over with, you know, there's been a lot of rumors that you may rematch Berto. How much truth is that?
You know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm really not what's the best way to put this? I mean, I wouldn't want somebody to twist it on my end, you know?
Right.
I would give the rematch to Berto any given day, but honestly, does he really deserve it? Not necessarily. He had a lot to say about me, which is boxing. I understand that.
Right.
But honestly, like, I came out on top. He said he was not ready and this and that. Okay, you're WBC champion of the world, for one. You got to be ready. Only thing is, I was ready as well.
Right.
And I came to do and conquer what I came to do, you know?
When you hear something like that, Victor, when a guy that obviously signed the fight you on, okay, and he says after, look, that wasn't me. You know it wasn't me. I wasn't ready. How much does that bother you? I mean, does it take away the feeling of the accomplishment that you did?
You know what? Like I said time and time again, everyone's liable to their own opinion. I don't really know what criticism I may or may not receive from here on. Do I care? No. People tend to try to steer people in certain directions. Well, I'm not one to be pushed around. I don't follow the rules too often. I go by what my heart and my gut tells me. And
right.
In this particular fight, I was ready in all aspects, man. Yeah, I know I was underrated big time. I was not even given an opportunity, basically. But I knew what I was there to do. And I knew I had won the fight 3 months before it took place. Only because I trained to my very best. I left it on the gym every single day, day in and day out. I listened to my coaches all the time. And therefore, I came out on top, you know, and that's it.
Absolutely. Gabriel?
One of the things I thought, you talked about it to Steve Kim when we were at the fights, was the clinching. And you, I thought that the clinching and the ref not calling foul on that prevented you from getting the stoppage win. I thought you would have knocked him out if you'd have been allowed to. Can you talk a little bit about how you prepared for that and what your thoughts were on the ref? Because to me, it felt like 2-on-1 in there.
You know what? Honestly, I was ready for the referee to do that. I was ready for it all. The referee was playing for Berto. He was pulling. I'm pretty sure he was rooting for Berto because he wouldn't take the time to even acknowledge that this guy was trying to like hold me throughout the whole time, throughout the whole fight. Which I prepared for that because in the fights, I think coaches we estimated that he holds a very high percentage throughout the fight. He hits and then holds, hits and then holds. So I got ready for him to do that to me. But in the end, I just made sure I kept my composure because I know that he frustrates people, or he tries to smother you, and I was going to be the one doing the smothering.
Did you feel, even though everybody knows who you are, you're a name in boxing, obviously, you fought for a title before, did you really feel like the underdog in this and that everything was going to be against you?
Yeah, I felt like the underdog. I felt very disrespected. I felt like nobody's ever given me a shot, you know, really.
Right.
I mean, it's not that good of a feeling, but at the end of the day, it kind of is because I don't really care what people have to say about me, you know. I do me, and then I'm going to do me tomorrow and the day after that, you know, so. It's kind of interesting, I guess.
Right. You know, let me ask you this here, because when you got dropped, and then you started to circle, you know, trying to get away from his flurries of punches. You know, at one point, Victor, it looked like Actually, when you knocked him down, before you threw your punches back at him and you dropped him, you yelled out something. What did you yell out? His corner, and it kind of looked like you said, no way, like there was no way he was going to
do that. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, because he was like, he was trying to swear at me. He said something along the lines of, you ain't got it. And I was like, that's right. I'm the new WBC champ. And whack. And then he just, next you know, he went down. And I was like, oh, not champ for long, son.
Now, Floyd Mayweather was there, you know, to witness what was going on. You know, obviously Floyd was there believing that it was going to be a brutal night. After the fight, after you took the WBC belt, did Floyd come up to you, say anything to you?
No, you know what? Surprisingly, he didn't. It was surprising because Floyd has actually always respected me in the sense of, you know, just a person. I always respected him as well. But I'm pretty sure the upset of the night probably kind of turned some heads, like, what the hell's going on here?
Right.
I don't know. Because I did shock the world, not only because I wasn't supposed to win, but also because I jumped in from 140 to 147, and I took out the king. In a very good, great fashion.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's in line as fight of the year. I mean, it was a fight that had everybody standing up. It was a great, great fight. You know, Madonna is he's over there making noise himself. I don't know if you've seen that picture that he posted it up on Twitter and he's put up on his fan page on Facebook. If you have, what are your thoughts about that picture he put up of you?
I haven't seen it, but honestly, I don't know. Like I said it before, I bought Berto. A dog that barks doesn't ever really bite. So
I'm curious. You have a very different attitude. Maybe we just haven't talked to you enough. It seems like you don't really seem to care what anybody thinks. And you know, after the Madonna fight, you received a lot of criticism, and a lot of people, myself included, picked against you, kind of based on that fight, that they thought when you met adversity, you wouldn't be able to deal with it. What changed in between that fight and now? What has made it that you don't really care what anybody has to say about you? And where was the point where you began to believe in yourself and you knew that no matter what came, you'd be able to handle it?
You know what? I've had a lot of positive, influential people talk to me. I appreciate the honesty, by the way. You're rooting against me. I
wasn't rooting against you. I think they get.
of course not. I'm just kidding. No, the thing is, you know, I was kind of tired of being that piece of gum on the bottom of everybody's shoe that everybody talks about really bad just because I had one off night, you know. And I just finally said, F it, man. I'm going to just leave this on the line. This is mine. It's going to be mine. It's not maybe. It's not, oh, let's see. It's it will. April 16th, it will. I will go down in history. I will. I don't know. I even thought about it like this. I will shut up the media. And I think I did that. Well, kind of, because, you know, media is media. But at the end of the day, I'm like, I win the fight. And people still have some stuff to say about me. And I'm just like, that's hilarious. All right. So I just don't care what anybody thinks about me.
Right.
Go ahead, Dave.
No, go ahead. I'll come right behind you. Go ahead.
Well, one of the guys in your camp, Haas, I ran into him at the wild card a few days after the fight, and he told me that he asked you how you thought the fight was going to go, and you had envisioned a fight where you were cut on both eyes, you'd been down, and then you knocked Berto out in the 11th. Is that correct? And did you actually picture the fight going to be something hard?
Yep. I told Coach. I know this is not an easy fight. I know that. I'm aware for war. I'm aware of battle, and I'm not stopping for anything. I told Coach, I don't care if both of my eyebrows are sliced open. This full-on war is going to happen, and it's going to take place, and I am not going to stop for him or anyone. I told him, I don't care how many times I go down. I'm going to put him down as well, and I will knock him out. Okay, so maybe I couldn't knock him out, but he did have some help from the referee. So at the end of it all, I did tell him, regardless, Coach, it's going to be a one-sided fight for me. Hmm. And sure enough, it was one-sided for me.
Would you have not gotten the credit if you'd have knocked him out in the first round? You know,
you know what?
Said, oh, well,
Berto's not who we thought he was or whatever?
No, I doubt it. You know, they probably would have said, oh, he just got caught, like, cold or something. I don't know. I think this is the best thing that could have happened to me, man. I honestly think I proved a lot. Did I have to? Not necessarily, but to myself I did. I needed to make sure and tell myself and recognize the fact that I'm a caliber world champ fighter.
Right.
And I did it against a great fighter himself, Andre Berto. Andre Berto is no joke. He is not taken lightly. He is a caliber fighter, right behind two of the most popular and best fighters of all time, Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. And you know what? He was in line behind all them. I dethroned him. That just says how good of a fighter I am, you know?
So let me ask you this. Now that you defeated Berto, how do you feel that you're in line for a possible fight with either Floyd or with Manny?
That's what I've been looking for, you know?
Have you heard anything back, any feedback from the Pacquiao camp of a possible showdown? I mean, we know the Cold War between Top Rank and Golden Boy, but does it seem like it could happen?
I don't know, honestly. Would I enjoy it? I would love that fight to take place. But I don't know. Bob apparently doesn't like me. Apparently, I'm not a true Mexican because I don't speak Spanish, according to Bob Arum. Well, I had something funny to tell you guys. If Bob Arum really even spent 5 minutes talking to me back when he was my promoter, he would know that I speak fluent Spanish.
Right.
But he never acknowledged the fact that I was Mexican-American. I speak fluent Spanish. He don't know anything about me besides the fact that I used to be his fighter, and I was just another paycheck for him, basically. So, hey, guess what? I guess he probably underestimated the fact that this particular fighter not only went to school, graduated from high school, went to college as well. So, you know, school plus an okay type of guy, you put that together, you get a semi-smart okay guy. When you get semi-smart in boxing, it's no good for the promoter because he can't manipulate you.
Right.
And that's where Mr. Bob Arum was kind of out of it. And I don't know. I'm sure he plays with everybody else, but he ain't fooling anybody with himself, with me.
Absolutely, man. Let me ask you, where does Victor Ortiz go from here now? I mean, you know, the biggest obstacle was Andre Berto. You know, a lot, like you said, you know, a lot of people didn't believe in you being able to take the crown away from the WBC champ. But now that you're the WBC champ, but what is there left for you to do now? I mean, what challenge are you looking at to possibly get in with?
You know, it's funny you ask me that because not only do I want to fight the best of the best, but you guys are now saying I'm amongst one of the best as well in the world, right? But
right.
I don't want to go backwards in my career. I want to fight some of the best household names out there, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm one of the brokest world champions you'll ever meet. I haven't made any kind of money. I mean, for Uncle Sam, yeah. But you look at my bank account, and it's like, yo, dude, didn't you just fight? It's like, yeah, it's called I have bills, and then I have to pay a coroner. And, of course, I don't make money like, you know, the Khans and like the, I guess nowadays I've heard the Maidanas and everyone. So I'm left with a good paycheck to get by for rent. And, you know, so at the end of the day, what I really want is a shot against all the big boys. And I don't even need to mention the big boys, but one starts with an M, and his last name starts with a P. The other one is F, and ends with a W, or MW, okay? So, you know, all together, I'm not going to mention names. I'm just trying to say, hey, that'd be nice, but my number one priority there is to dethrone everyone.
Did you have a chance to watch the Madonna and Morales fight? And if so...
No, I heard so much about it, though, but, you know... I guess I don't know.
What's the name that people threw out immediately? Like, always in boxing, you get a win, and it's always a great win, but now he needs to do this. And everybody started throwing out, you know, well, he needs to fight Maidana. He needs to get that win back. But don't you think that if Maidana fought you at 147, you really wouldn't get the same credit because, I mean, he just went to the wall with, you know, a 34-year-old guy who's pretty faded, almost lost to Corley, and it pretty much got shut out except for the last few rounds against Amir Khan. Does that win maybe personally mean anything to you at least? Professionally at 147, I don't think it means a lot.
You know what? Honestly, to tell you the truth, I think it's a slap in the face to even mention Marcos Maidana in the same sentence as Andre Berto or even compare the two because Berto was actually a caliber fighter. Maidana was a fake fighter. I mean, yeah, he beat me, but it was not my night. I had an off night, man. It was a fluke. And if you guys don't realize it or anybody out there don't realize it, I did beat him every single round before I got stopped.
Right.
He dropped him, what, three times, right? Well, I mean, he did drop you. I mean, he did beat you. But, I mean, to you, I mean, on any level, do you want to do that fight again?
I don't care, honestly. If he moves up to 147, why not? I need a tune-up fight.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
What do you think it's more important? You know, some guys, they get, like Martinez is kind of facing this. They get to that top level. They have a big win. And then they're kind of stuck with no opponents or they're looking for Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, and they're kind of sitting on the shelf. Is it more important to you to keep fighting, keep active, and just kind of begin your reign than to wait around for the big fight?
You know what? I want to fight the best of the best, so if it's whatever it is, man. I'm ready, bro. I'm really, really ready.
What if they don't want to fight you, though, Victor? I mean, what do you do from there? I mean, there's got to be some other opponents out there that you're eyeing and looking at and saying, hey, I mean, can Victor Ortiz jump up to 154 if there is no more obstacles for you to jump over at 147?
You know what? I don't really call the shots. Like, I tell my coaches like this, coach, you're my boss. I listen to you. In the ring, I'm the boss. I don't know what they have in store or plan for me, but whatever they say goes.
So there is somebody out there.
Whoever they say I'm fighting next, that's who it is.
So there is somebody out there you do listen to then.
Oh yeah, definitely my coaches, man. They're the guys I give all the credit to. The guys I do everything to. They're definitely my the reason for my success.
Really, you look at 147, man, and there's not a lot of people there. You know, there's yourself, obviously, because he can't fight you. There's Sean Porter way down the list. You got Pauly Malignaggi who's fighting at 147. But, yeah, no one would want to see that fight. And, you know, maybe Mike Jones, Mel Cook, Aiden. I mean, there's really no names. JoJo Dan. I mean, I think you're in a position where you're the ruler of a division that doesn't really have anybody. You know, that's the problem.
Well, my manager made a very key, interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
He called me the gatekeeper of 147 pounds, and that's what I've become. So I'm not thinking of leaving this throne anytime soon, so I'm in for the long haul.
You know, though, a gatekeeper, though, is somebody that's almost out the door where another guy needs to come in. I mean, I would call you one of the most exciting 147 pounders right now. I mean, that's why I think it would be so frustrating not to see you get in with either Manny Pacquiao or I don't even know if Floyd's planning to even make a comeback. So it seems to me, Victor, that you've kind of opened the door to maybe welcome or kind of taunt the 140 pounders to jump in weight to face you now.
Let's do it then. I'll be waiting.
You said before training camp you weren't allowed to surf. How much surfing are you going to get done now?
I'm sorry, what was that?
You said before during training camp you weren't allowed to go surfing, which I know is a big passion of yours.
Oh, man, I would go surf right now. I would go surf right now, but I'm actually in Kansas, and it's kind of hard to surf in cornfields.
True. That is very true. What is it about surfing that you like?
There is a positive thing about that. There's no way and heck, that you can actually get bit by a shark. But
it depends on what kind of shark, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that definitely. I would have to agree. No, I'm actually thinking of, I just enjoy just the beauty, the quietness of it all.
Right.
It's like my zen zone. You know, I get there, and it's like you're waiting for the wave,
until you start getting these crazy little thoughts sometimes. It's like, uh-oh, what if I'm just floating right here waiting for my wave and there's some sharks just swimming under me? I mean, that's the only thought that kind of crosses my mind sometimes, and I'm like, okay, this is not that great right now. But other than that, it's a zen zone for me. I can, like, go out there, surf, look at the waves, get smashed by a few, ride a few. It's pretty fun, you know, just kind of
right.
Get lost in the moment, forget about life.
You know, it seems to me that the only big fight out there for you, Victor, I don't know if it would be a big fight, but it would definitely draw a lot of attention because the attention is there, is a Brandon Rios. I mean, he did congratulate you, but what are your thoughts about that?
Oh, he congratulated me?
I mean, he did, yeah, he said that it was a good win for you. You know, didn't really have a whole lot more than say. He said you proved him wrong, you know?
Yeah. Oh, right on. Well, you know what? I've never had any bad blood toward him, so that's cool, man. That's awesome. Other than that, I just, you know, I don't know, man. Like I said earlier, everybody has their opinions, so that's cool. I mean, they think a little different of me. Maybe they don't. I don't really have a whole lot to say there, you know.
How about a still a possible showdown with him? Like I said, if there's nothing there, I think that's the biggest fight out there for you, would be against you and Brandon, because he's been so vocal about the bad blood he has for you.
Okay, let me get something straight. Rios is not worth my time, one. Two, Rios is a lightweight. Three, I am not a made world champion. Four, I became champion, dethroning one of the world's greatest, in your eyes, world champion. Not some chump from the street, okay? So, I'm in the New York Yankees. He's in nowhere. So, that's it.
I like that. Well, Vic, I don't want to take up more of your time, brother. I know you're getting fitted. Hey, man, it's always a pleasure to have you on and speak to you. And I can't wait to find out who's going to be your next opponent or who you're going to be, what you're going to be doing next. I heard you're going to be at the Club Nokia. So
I'm going to be at the Club Nokia Thursday, and then tonight I'm going to be at 810 Zone in Kansas City with my boys. They're from his name's Stephen St. John, 810. Check it out. Check out his radio show. It's pretty sick, man. We have a lot of fun there. So, yeah. So tonight, 810 Zone.
All right, brother. Well, thank you again.
Hey, thank you. You guys take care of yourselves, and I'll be seeing you guys soon, or vice versa.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. Take care.
Okay. Take care, brother. Well, there you go. Victor Ortiz is opening up and talking to us about Andre Berto, along with, you know, calling out Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao. I mean, not calling him out. I don't know if you want to say calling him out, but hoping and gearing up to possibly sway them to try to get in the ring with them. How much could he sway them? I don't know. That's a tough one. And we had a chance to talk to Rolando, who represents and manages Victor Ortiz. You know, Gabe, I like this new Victor. I mean, he's a lot more blunt and to the point when he answers, you know, the questions to you and to anyone. And but at the same time, he still has that little boyish about him where he giggles about it when he could tell the uncomfortable moments. You know what I'm saying? But then you could kind of see the grinding of the teeth where when he mentions particular things, especially like Madonna and Rios, you know, you can tell it's this, he's past that point, but at the same time, it's still underneath his skin.
How could it not be? You know, a guy takes your O like that and, you know, drops you several times and you end up getting all this criticism. How could that guy not bother you? You know, but
right.
That's the thing, you know, is interesting. You know, you bring him up and he just dismisses him. I don't need to face that guy. He's not that good. But yeah, but he beat you. At the same
right.
time, you know, Maidana just struggled with Morales in an exciting fight, but he struggled. And we haven't seen him beat really an elite guy other than Victor Ortiz at 140. You know, he had a disputed loss to Kotelnik, but that's kind of it. You know, he can beat Victor Caio, but he can't beat Amir Khan. So, and he can't beat Eric Morales at 140. So
right.
at 147, really, what would that fight mean? Not really much.
No, not really much at all. You know, the thing, too, is that, you know, by dismissing him, I think he knew kind of more or less what we were going with, because, you know, fight fans were like, well, how good is Madonna if Morales was able to last with them for 12 rounds and take some of his biggest and best punches through that 12-round championship pay-per-view card, you know? And I think he knew that we were going to try to – well, I knew I was trying to gear up for that, and he pretty much shut that down before we could even ask him that. I mean, by saying that it's a slap in his it's a slap in his face, it's disrespectful. You know, I hope we can get Chino on the phone with us here on Leaving in the Ring, and maybe talk to him about if there's a possibility him moving up to 147, and gathering some wins up there before getting Victor Ortiz. Or does he want to go immediately after Victor? Because I have a very strong possibility. I think I'm feeling very strong about this, that there's a possibility there's not going to be anybody there for Victor Ortiz to face at 147. Kell Brook is a guy that's, you know, we mentioned, but he's overseas. Does Victor want to go over there? Is that a big money fight for him? He's saying he's the brokest champ out there right now, holding on to the WBA championship green belt. And he sounds like, hey, I'm looking for the paydays now. There's not a lot of possibilities, not a lot of avenues. There's more or less him holding on to this. But let's get to what Rolando had to say, because he had a lot to say to clear up the air about any of the possibilities that Victor was hoping he could get in the future.
Hello?
Hello, Rolando?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how you doing, brother? This is Dave Duenas with Leave It in the Ring.
Hey, what's up, Dave?
Hey, so we conducted our interview. It came out fantastic. I have Gabriel Montoya on the studio line right now. Hey, Rolando, you think,
okay,
so you have a few minutes? We like to kind of interview you real quick.
Yeah, let me kind of find a corner here. Yeah, go for it, buddy.
Okay. Hey, you know, first off, I mean, congratulations on the win. You know, you guys had everybody up against you guys and not accomplishing that, and you did it. But really quick, now that you guys have done this, I mean, this was the biggest obstacle and the monster of your guys' career to kind of surpass, and you did that. You slayed the dragon.
Yeah.
But at 147, my question is, what other dragon is there to slay? I mean, Manny Pacquiao seems to be really far from reach because of the fact he's with Top Rank. Floyd, we don't even know if he's going to get out of retirement. Where does the Ortiz team go from here?
You know, just kind of to give you an idea, from our position, you know what, getting the world championship was the easy part, okay? The hardest part is keeping it, because the dynamics of the battlefield change, right? All of a sudden you have a young man that everyone's telling them he's great, a young man that's coming into an enormous amount of money, a bunch of other distractions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is where it gets hard, because now not only do you have to basically try to get, you know, the other fighters, but you also got a target on your back. And somewhere, someplace, there's a young kid that wants to do what Victor Ortiz did on that. And you have to be very aware of that, right? You have to be very aware of that, right? Right now, we just conquered the hill. And the question is, you know, once you're on the hill, there's only one way to go, and that's down. The question is, how do you choose to leave that hill, right? Do you go down on your own? Do you get pushed off? You know what, or do you slip off, you know? So in answer to your question, we want to basically dominate the hill, and we're sharing this hill with three people, right? There is Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, okay? And now there's Victor Ortiz. I know, because of the politics between Golden Boy and what do you call it, and the Top Rank, that's going to be a difficult one. I also know that Mayweather has issues, right? But hopefully within the next week or so, we'll be able to have a little better picture of what Mayweather is doing, and we would like to fight Mayweather. And I think Mayweather wants to come back and fight too, right? He's getting a lot of flack from a lot of people. I'm sure he's getting a financial pinch, you know, and I think he wants to basically show that he's still, you know what, the man out there, and we want to show that, you know what, there's a new kid in town, you know. So I think that is the initial reaction, without fully sitting down and looking at all of the equations around us, you know. And Pacquiao eventually, you know, he's got to do something too,
You know what? Who is he going to fight? Mosley? Who he fights after that? Manuel Marquez again? Then what? You know what I mean?
Right.
So by the mere fact that we have limited places to go and they have limited places to go, it might bring us together.
Do you think it's Golden Boy's best interest to resolve this Cold War with Top Rank? Because, I mean, you got Shane Mosley that walked away because of the fact the negotiations wasn't there because Top Rank wouldn't even answer their calls from Golden Boy. And now you hear Marquez has already done that, where Golden Boy may have to look a little deeper because he may be losing fighters left and right that have an opportunity to face Pacquiao.
Look, when there's a Cold War, there's two people involved, right? I think Golden Boy has certain issues that they have to do. In addition to that, Top Rank has certain issues they have to do, right? This is no good for anyone, right? It's no
right.
good for the fighters. It's no good for the promoters. It's no good for the fans.
It's
because
no good
for
the wallet. Right,
yeah, yeah, absolutely. It prevents that. But I can assure you, when you start throwing away $40 million figures and $30 million figures, there's always a way to come to the table. I've seen Bob Arum and Don King hate each other, throw shit at each other, unplug their speakers at the press conference, and they've always found a common ground for the purposes of generating revenue. You know, that is the ultimate leverage you have there. You know what? And the way that I look at it, we got the new kid in town. He's 24 years old, right?
Right.
Those guys are getting a little bit older. You know, if they want to fight us, great, because we want to fight them. If they choose not to fight us because politics, you know, as a fighter and a fight manager, the promoters work for us. Bob Arum works for Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao says, look, Bob, you've been making this fucking fight. Excuse my language. You're
no
making
problem.
This fight. The fight's going to be made. And we have a little inside with Manny Pacquiao also. I mean, we're friends. We talk to each other, right? And, you know, one of our stable mates, which is David Rodella, is his number one sparring partner. So if I want to talk to Pacquiao or Victor wants to talk to Pacquiao and says, hey, let's make sure that the people that work for us make it best for us. It's going to happen, you know? And they can bark all they want. You know, Bob likes to bark. You know,
yeah.
Richard likes to bark. But, you know, ultimately, it gets done, you know? It
right.
gets done because it's what the fighters want.
Rolando, this is Gabe Montoya with Maxbox.
Yeah, Gabe.
In the ring. Hey, how you doing?
Sure. Good. Yourself, buddy?
I'm doing good. It's, you know, beautiful LA
awesome.
Day.
Absolutely.
And so, unfortunately, but... They've actually already. Well, Richard Schaefer came out a couple days ago and said that there's already been an offer on the table for Juan Manuel Marquez to fight Manny in the fall. So let's say those fights are off the table. And Bob hasn't really confirmed it. He won't confirm or deny it.
Sure.
Looking around the rest of the division, it's kind of thin. I mean, you've got a guy like Randall Bailey who's now at 147. You know, Mike Jones is there, but he's kind of. Not quite ready, some would say. Where do you guys look at? You know, I mean, do you look at maybe like out of England?
Yeah, there's a couple of things there. You know what? First of all, you look to the big guys. If they're not available, it's not that we don't want to have the fight, but we lose the alternative, right? So we have to look to another alternative. And the other alternative, I think we have to honor certain things, right? Like the number one contender, okay? Might
right.
not be the most exciting fight in the world, but it's the only fight that is available to us, so that's what we take.
Right.
And then we have something very interesting that a lot of people lose sight, which is right below us. It's a 140-pound division with a bunch of young men that have the same or similar age as Victor Ortiz, and all of them, it's just a matter of time, will come up to 147. So now we have Khan potentially coming up to 147. We have Timothy Bradley coming up to 1 potentially. We have Jazab Judah. So if things don't work out here at our level, right, we can always lend an invitation for them to come up also. And the interesting aspect, a lot of people, well, they're natural 140. Well, when you're 123 years old, you're 24 years old, I don't think you're really done growing like Victor, right? He just got to his 147 man weight, and I think these guys are heading up that division also, right? So it kind of gives us, you know, a big landscape to choose from. The question is, which is the one that we can do it, which is the one that would be more beneficial, and at this point in time, which is the one the fans would, you know, because that's my end consumer, That's my end consumer, right? We're providing service, and the service is the entertainment of boxing. Which is the one that the end consumer will buy the most?
Now, we asked Victor about the Maidana fight, you know, and,
yeah,
and what a rematch would mean to him. You know, as his advisor, manager, would you be willing to make that fight? Do you think that Victor would even get any sort of credit for
yeah.
beating him at 147?
You know what? I think we usurped that. We surpassed him. You know what? And you know, Maidana's struggling with people like Eric Morales. You know what? And what we did, we kind of got on a springboard. And we basically went way above and beyond, and we performed way above and beyond. Now, if Maidana, you know, if we don't have any alternatives and the public kind of likes the fight, you know, it's the redemption, you know, we may consider it, but I think we redeemed ourselves in this fight. I think Maidana's not an issue no more. And basically he's been, you know, although he performed good against Khan, he didn't perform too good against
Morales.
As a matter of fact, when they used basic fundamentals, boxing fundamentals against him, he was like, whoa, he had a real hard time, you know. And, you know, it's just not appealing. It's just not appealing to us, you know, because there's nothing to win there, you know. What else, you know, you go in there, you beat a Maidana, what? You go in there, you lose a Maidana, what? You know what I mean? And the key here is to...
Right.
Try to stay on top of the mountain for as long as possible. That's the purpose of it, you know.
How long do you have till you? Did you inherit the deadline for Selkirk Aydin, or is it? You know,
No. Basically, we will. You know, we'll actually look at the specifics of, you know, because we just had general discussions. We kind of been on this whirlwind tour, you know. We've had general discussions, but it's definitely something we want to consider. It's definitely something we have to consider. We're the WBC champions of the world. However, you know what? If there's something a little bit more fruitful out there, then we will, you know, ask the WBC for an exception.
You know,
as most people do, right? And then the question becomes, will HBO even buy that fight?
Right.
You know, because it's not a pay-per-viewer, you know.
Well, considering the fights that they bought with Berto, well, he was WBC champion, like Freddie Hernandez, I don't see why they wouldn't, you know. But
yeah, I'm kind of, you know, it's an interesting comment because I'm kind of curious to see their response on that one also, because that would be basically the same argument might have, you know. If
right.
you guys did it for Berto, and, you know, why don't you do it for now? So let's see what they have to say. The politics are sometimes quite interesting in this game.
Right, right.
It's like looking at Sebastian Zibic wasn't a good enough opponent for Martinez, and now he's fighting Chavez Jr. on. Yeah.
You
know, the rules change every day, you know.
You know, if anyone in HBO is listening, no disrespect. Just
right, right. Well, no disrespect for the leaving the ring side, okay?
yeah, exactly.
You know,
they can blame me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we conducted this interview, you had said, you know, maybe within a week you'll be able to find out what's going on with Floyd Mayweather, what's going to happen there. Can you give us a little bit of details of what you meant by that? I mean, are you guys in?
I can only give you the information that I know. You know, Floyd has some personal issues that he's addressing. It's my understanding that these issues will be addressed this week. You know, I'm not sure whether it's a court issue or a financial issue or whatever, but, you know what, we were told vaguely that, you know, we will address these issues, and if the issues are addressed and resolved, then, you know, they would consider opening discussions up with us, you know, in more detail. Because right after the fight, you know, you do not want to rush to, oh, we got to make this fight, because basically the decisions are emotional. You really want to let all the festivities settle down, take
right.
a good step back, acquire all the facts, look at your complete landscape from a 360-degree view, what I mean from that, what's on top, what's on the bottom, what's on the side, right? And once you have the information, you know, you start, you know, balancing what's in the best interest of Victor, you know, why it's in the best interest of Victor in relationship to the other components that are around you, you know?
Right. Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, so far, the Golden Boy stables have been having great nights. You know, Robert the Ghost Guerrero out of Gilroy had a fantastic win over Michael Casitas. But immediately after, Richard Schaefer and Golden Boy were saying, you know, Robert, they want Floyd Mayweather, and they said that's a fight they would like to make and push happen. But now that your guys' performance, this performance you guys would have had Berto, in my opinion, that puts Victor above any obligations or promises that Golden Boy has with any of their fighters.
Sure.
But how much are backing are they having for Victor to have a Floyd Mayweather fight?
You know what? Basically, you know, Golden Boy Promotions has certain assets, right? One of them is Guerrero, and one of them is Victor Ortiz, right? And they will try to position their assets, you know, accordingly to get the benefits for the fighter. The question then becomes, is it Guerrero or Victor Ortiz, right? And I think the ultimate question is answered by Floyd Mayweather, right?
Right.
When he comes back, he's going to be a big draw. And Floyd Mayweather always has said he wants to fight the best of the best. We have just been ranked number 3, pound for pound, in the world. Okay? Behind, I believe it's Pacquiao, right? It was Mayweather, Pacquiao, and now Victor, okay? And I think that is the most appealing fight. That would be the most revenue-generating fight for him to decide on.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I mean, the Ghost is great and everything, and he's a friend of ours and stuff like that, but, you know, I don't think his performance nor his marketing position is as stellar as Victor's right now, right? And when you're at that level with Floyd and stuff, you want to make the most amount of money in the quickest amount of time, because at 32, 33, that window starts shutting down on you.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, I mean, I wouldn't say he's not a draw, you know, robber, but I would say the criticism would be he's jumping up 2 divisions to face a guy that's pound for pound, where Victor's already there. He's ranked number 3.
Yeah, and I think you got to earn that. You got to earn that, right? You know
right.
what? And we were fortunate enough that, you know, where we had a blockbuster and we earned it not only, you know, ourselves in the media's eyes, but also in the eyes of the guys that have control right now, Pacquiao and Mayweather.
Absolutely. Well, Rolando, I don't want to take up any more of your time, brother. I appreciate you giving us the amount of time right now to speak to us about what is up next, and hopefully we get to see who is the opposition that's going to be facing Victor Ortiz across the ring next time.
Yeah, absolutely. In a couple of weeks, give me a call, and I'll let you know if there's an update or not. Okay, buddy?
All right,
take care, guys.
Okay, you take care. Well, there you go. You know, Rolando, who manages and advises Victor Ortiz, good guy, man. I liked his answers, you know, where he's about as honest as he can be in answering anything that we asked. And, excuse me, a lot of the stuff he's, you know, he's being honest about. You know, don't really know what Floyd, you can't make Floyd do what he wants to do. The Cold War with Top Rank and Golden Boy is a huge fact, and not even a speed bump. It's a wall that needs to be bulldozed down in order for them to even try to attempt any type of fights that are lucrative for either camps. And you know, Madonna, I don't know necessarily if a lot of us are going to agree on if Vic, you know, surpassed that in wanting, but like, you know, Gabriel mentioned, you know, it's at 147, what does it prove? You know, he beat you at 140. I think people would want to see it at 140, where they originally first had the invitation of meeting each other. Gabriel, you over there at the Club Nokia yet, or what are you doing there, brother? You're awfully quiet. You in the bathroom? You know, Christian.
This is actually really, really noisy out here. I'll be in a spot where I can talk in about 2 minutes, Dave. Just 1 second.
Okay, go ahead, because I think we're going to end the show really soon here. Just because of the fact that Christian Favelo, I believe they're still in weighing, and it's going to be, by the time he's going to get on, I think we're going to be at the tail end of our show. But if fight fans want to call in really quick and chop it up with us, I'm sorry, I'm over here getting tongue-tied here, chop it up with us on Leaving the Ring, 347-215-7598. Also, again, we still have tickets, a pair of tickets to give out to a listener, a fan of the sport that we love, boxing, to go out over there to Indio, California. All you got to do is get on the website, leavingtheringat.com, and check out the ticket giveaway and make your picks on the poll of who's going to win tomorrow night, okay, on three fights that are happening tomorrow night. Give yourself a chance. You're going to have Aaron Garcia is the last one. It's Aaron Garcia, who's a prospect, a guy that we had on the show, who was an amateur guy, decorated, who's going to be going against Abraham Lopez, another very talented guy, you know, from the Riverside, you know, part of L.A. They're going to be mixing it up. You know, Aaron's from San Diego. He's over been at the wild card. He's the guy that walked into the wild card, and everybody stopped what they're doing because it was like them witnessing a ghost walking into the gym, and now he's back, but he's the opponent. You know, you would think a guy that had that much decoration as an amateur would be the guy getting his tune-up fights to get him to where they were hoping that he was going to be. But no, he's an opponent for Abraham Lopez. They're not sugarcoating this, you know what I mean? They're not giving him the easy road. They want him to go uphill. So by going uphill, he's going against a very polished and dangerous Abraham Lopez. It should be a really good fight. And that's on the Thompson card as well for the New Blood series that the Thompson holds at the Double Tree in Ontario, California. I mean, this is something that – this is a really good fight card here, man. I mean, anybody that's going to go out there, leaving the ring, will definitely be out there to cover the fight. We're going to try to cover the Reno event too as well, because on that Solo Box Sale, again, you're going to have another good set of televised fights. So a lot of things on Friday night, you know. So that's interesting. Like I said, if you get all your picks on that poll, you win some tickets. So give it a shot. There's been a few people that have been emailing us. You can even send us your picks at leavingthering@gmail.com, which we've had people do rather than leaving the comments on the site. They want to make sure that we get it. You know, you want to make sure we get it and you're not counted out in the contest. Hey, just send them on down and then we make sure we'll email you back and let you know the end of the results. Okay, so you still got a week to figure out. I mean, no, you don't. I'm sorry, you only have till tomorrow to figure out if you win these pair of tickets to go to Indio, California at Fantasy Springs for the Solo Box Sale. Leobrado Andrade is going to be on the headline along with his younger brother and Randy Caballero. Can't miss it, man. You know, pair of tickets, have some brewskis, take a lady friend, whatever you need to do and stuff like that. Take your homie and, you know, a designated driver. Don't drink and drive. Indio, California is beautiful. What was that, Gary?
Oh yeah, it's a fun venue too, man. You know, I've been out there a few times, and people go crazy, and it's really interesting to see how they react to Randy Caballero. You know, he's a star out there, man. I mean, he's from the region, and it doesn't matter where they put him on the card, whether he's the last fight or the first fight. People come out in droves to see him, and they just go nuts when he comes out. So, I encourage anybody, go check out that venue. It's really small, so it's just set up so that there's not a bad seat in the house. The environment's always great. And, you know, I'm not sure. I'm still trying to figure out if I'm actually going to go out to that. I'm hoping to. But I'll be doing a story on Randy for next week for Max Boxing. And I'm kind of hoping to go out there because they've offered me the opportunity to watch him prepare for the fight in the locker room beforehand. So I might take him up on that. We'll see.
I'm being told right now that Favelo is ready. I'm telling him to send me the number so we can call him in and patch him in. So hopefully we can get him on. You know, it's almost like I said, we only have like another half an hour, so we can try to get him in. Let me just text him right here. Number, I will.
Well, I've actually got to step into the fight. The card is beginning, and I'm on deadline report tonight. So, Dave, unfortunately, I'm going to have to leave you a little sooner. I was hoping to get Christian earlier. But I hate to leave you out in a lurch, man, but I'm sure you'll do fine with Mr. Favela. So, fight fans, I'll see you next Thursday. And if you're at the fight night tonight, try not to throw too much stuff at me. I think Golden Boy's already going to do that. So. I'll catch up with you, man.
Okay, brother. You take care, man. Have a good time. And let me know if you're still alive.
I will. Later.
All right. There you go. Well, Gabriel Montoya signing off. We're going to find out whether or not we're going to have Christian Favelo to call in, who's a road warrior, guy that if you don't really know a whole lot about, trust me, you're going to want to find out, man. This guy fights everybody. He's the guy that got it with Jesse Vargas on the Fight Night Club Series, and a lot of us believe that he won and took that fight. You know, I mean, he's just one of those guys that is making a name for himself by being a road warrior. He's making a name for himself for coming out and fighting whoever and whenever and, you know, at what time, it doesn't matter to this kid. You know, this guy decides to do it, you know, and he's starting to become a legend within the circuit of boxing as the guy that will fight anybody. Wanting to be the baddest man on the planet is Cristian Favela. He's a Mexican guy where he comes to work. You know, he's, you know, Gabe sounds like he had a few tonight. He probably did, El Cabron. You know, he's probably over there having his drink on and stuff. You know, it's beautiful over there and stuff. Let me see. You know, we're going to try to get back, you know, Azteca's asking in the chat room, are we going to try to get back Nick Diaz on? You know what, we're going to try. I didn't try for this week because, you know, we just figured it was back-to-back, and we always want to keep everything fresh and new. So we'll try for next week because we do have some other guests that we're going to be pulling on for next week's show. So just, you know, hang tight, and we should have them back on with us, hopefully, and you know, the thing is, though, with Nick Diaz, is like when I was talking to their representative, you know, Caesar, he told me straight up, he's like, hey, Dave, I got to tell you something, man. The dude doesn't like to do interviews. You know, he's not media friendly. And I said, you know what? I've met him. I met him down when he was in San Jose when he was going to fight Ken Shamrock, and he was throwing the chairs around, and, you know, he was flipping off the media, and he was, you know, I don't know if he was flipping the media off, but he was flipping somebody off in the audience, you know, and it was just kind of pointed at us and stuff. But, you know, I see that already, and to me personally, I like that. I don't know about you guys, man. I just find it funny and entertaining. I was actually smiling and laughing when he was doing all that, and, you know, I don't know if he might have looked at me. I don't know. I don't know if he looked at me. He might have looked at me, and you know, but he did it because he probably would have said something to me, like, you know, what the fuck are you laughing about, dude? You know what I'm saying? And come at me, but I just, you know, I just one of those guys, man, I really, really enjoy you know, who when they do that, because it makes it entertaining and stuff. You know, it makes it entertaining and makes you want to sit there and watch Nick or anybody like Ricardo Mayorga, even like Fernando Vargas, man, who was really known to kind of gab out anything to anybody at any given time. You know, because just some angry guys, but at the same time they show great showmanship because they sell tickets. You know, they definitely sell tickets. So let me call in. Let's call in first off. So you guys got to bear. I'm by myself. Everybody left me. I'm alone. But let me call in Ernesto Torres, who's going to be translating for us here on Leaving the Ring, and then we'll call in Cristian Favela, and he's going to tell us a little bit about whether or not. Of how he's feeling. I mean, what I hear, this guy's always in training camp. This guy doesn't skip a beat. You know what I'm saying? So let's call him in, and then we'll patch in Cristian Favela, and we're going to find out. We're going to find out what's going on. How was weight? Did he make it okay? Was he struggling? Whatnot? You know, 0-0-0, whatever. And then we're going to find out here. Let's see. Come on, Ernie.
Hello.
Ernesto, what's up, brother? You're on live right now and Leaving in the Ring.
Hey, Dave. How you doing, brother?
Doing good, man. Hey, listen, I'm going to call him in right now, and you're going to be my translator. Gabriel had a scooter off, man, because he's over there at Club Nokia covering the Golden Boy card. So
no problem, man. I'd like to think my Spanish is better than his, Dave.
Yeah. I think the only Spanish that Gabriel knows is hot sauce. Hot sauce? Now, is this Christian's direct number here, or is this his manager number?
This is his manager number.
Okay. Hopefully the answer. This is on a private number. I'm really pumped up about speaking to Cristian Favela, man. I mean, this guy.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Yeah. Let me see if I can text him really quick so he can answer.
Yeah, just let him know it's on a private number so that.
Okay, hold on.
All right. Like I said, Fight Fans, I'm excited, man. I want to talk to him. It's a guy that a lot of us, you know, I mean, when you sit around to shoot the shit and talk boxing, his name is brought up. He's just one of those fighters, you know, like, hey, man, what about Cristian Favelo? You know, what do you think about that guy? This guy's a road warrior. You know, he's one of those names you cannot. You cannot, if you're a hardcore boxing fan, you just cannot mention his name, you know. And he hasn't had that big fight that's going to define who he is. But he's almost like, you know what, I guess the only way to really describe him would be he's the guy that is in the back burner that just keeps working at his craft, working and working and working. And eventually he's going to end up making that big payday, you know, but he needs to put food on the table, and he's got to put shelter over the roofs of his loved ones, and he's got to do what he's got to do, so he continuously says, yeah, I'll take that fight, you know, whether it's of best interest for him, because this is a fight game, it's the hurt business, you know what I mean? You're going to have a wear and tear in your body, and eventually your body's going to shut down, and you're hoping when you're in this game here, this politic game of boxing, that you eventually come across and getting the big bucks. You get the big meal. You know, the thing that most of us, I mean, well, if you're a boxer, most of you guys are, you know, most of those fighters are looking to score the lotto of everything, you know. What's up, ATL? Caesar, El Canal, ¿qué pasó, vato loco? This forever. So let's see, Ernie, are you still with me, brother? Did Ernie hang up too? No. Did he hang up with me? Let me see. Ernie, are you there? No, Ernie's still with me. So I believe he's probably on the other line and he's calling them. So as soon as Ernie gets back on, and we could try him again. You know, we only have a few more minutes here on Leaving in the Ring. So I want to squeeze him in, you know, 29 more minutes. And he's facing Mauricio Herrera, Cristian Favelo. He's a replacement because Mauricio was a replacement. And that card, you know, it's kind of hard to say because that card was all – everybody's a replacement, you know what I mean? Nichols was replaced for Jonathan Arellano and then somebody else and then somebody else and stuff like that. But Mauricio, El Maestro Herrera, is a tough guy, you know, and he may be in for a long night with Cristian Favelo. It depends on how Cristian Favelo's training camp was, because, you know, Jesse Vargas, who's under the Mayweather banner.
Hey,
what's up, brother?
Can you try them again? They'll answer now, since it was private. They weren't answering.
Okay, let's see if we can get a hold of them. Was going back with Jesse Vargas, who was considered a big puncher. A lot of people were looking at great things from Jesse Vargas because he was being trained by Roger Mayweather. Cristian Favelo was like, I'm not tripping off of that. I'm going to go in there and do my thing. And a lot of us felt that he won that fight. Hello.
Hello. Yeah.
Hello. Can we please speak to Cristian Favelo?
Sí. Okay. Déjate lo paso.
Okay. Gracias.
Okay.
Favela. Why am I saying Favelo? I'm nervous here.
Favela.
Bueno. Bueno. ¿Cómo estás?
Bien, 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 bien. Buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes, Cristian. Cristian, mi nombre es David Duenas. Estamos aquí en Living in the Ring Radio. Yo voy a hablar en inglés y Ernesto Torres va a hablar en español, ¿ok?
Ok, está bien.
Es porque yo soy pocho, yo no puedo hablar muy bueno en mi español.
No, no hay problema.
Ok, first off, man, Cristian, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you just got off of the weigh-in, and I want to thank you because I've been wanting to talk to you. I'm a huge fan of you. I think a lot of us here on Leaving Ring are a big fan of what you do. Were you in training camp before you got the call to come down to the Thompson card?
Cristian, buenas tardes. Mira, sabemos que acabas de salir de las pesadas y queremos sí. agradecerte por estar con nosotros aquí en Leaving in the Ring. Te queríamos preguntar, ¿tú estabas entrenando antes de esta llamada que te hicieron para pelear a este individuo?
Sí, yo peleé el 23 de febrero. Siempre dejé una semana a descansar con la familia y ya me puse a entrenar. Mes y medio entrené bien ahora para esta pelea.
I was in the ring the 23rd of February, so I usually leave 1 week. You know, time for me and my family, and then I get back at it. So I've been in training for about a month and a half.
You know, when you're in training camp, who are you training with to make sure that you're prepared? I mean, because you're almost like on a Rolodex for promoters. You know, you really don't have like an agenda of who you're going to fight. You just fight whoever is appointed to you.
Cristian, cuando tú entrenas, ¿cómo es que entrenas sin saber realmente con quién vas a pelear? Porque sabemos que te hablan ya, a veces hasta días antes de una pelea. ¿Cómo es como entrenas?
Casi siempre yo tengo que me ayudan allá pesos por la fuerza. Me gusta entrenar con pesos welter, pesos medios, peso gallo, por la velocidad. Me gusta, a mí siempre me gusta prepararme bien, como si son, los peleadores son muy fuertes, mucha experiencia. Me gusta prepararme bien, correr, me corro mis 6 kilómetros, 8 kilómetros, pues le meto arena, le meto montaña. Siempre me gusta estarme entrenando, preparándome bien, así, a conciencia, bien a conciencia y fortaleza para no, para cuando me hablan, por siempre estar listo, más que nada venir y dar pelea y agradar a la gente, pero siempre me gusta estar, te puedo decir, un 70-90% siempre activo.
I usually fight individuals between the welterweight division, 140 pounds. You know, I usually go and run and stay active. And I just like to, you know, give the fans a good show. Whenever I'm called upon, I'm ready to go.
You know, you have fought some of the names in boxing. I mean, your last recent outing was with Jesse Vargas, who myself and a lot of other fight fans believe you won that fight. It was taken from you. But you fought like Patrick Lopez, Marcito Gesta twice, Hector Serrano, Luis Ramos Jr., I mean, Danny Garcia, Jorge Romero, you know, Vicente Escobedo, Ramon Martinez. And those names are names that you've lost on. I mean, out of all those losses, because you have – you know, quite a few on your resume. There's 32. You've only been stopped once. Out of those 32 losses, how many of them do you really think they were a lost? And you lost them just because of the fact that you don't have the backings that most of these other fighters have when it comes to promotional power?
Cristian, tú has peleado de los nombres de los prospectos más fuertes que están en el box ahorita, incluyendo los nombres que él acaba de mencionar. ¿Cómo es que te sientes tú, como la última vez que peleaste con Vargas, mucha gente de nuestros fanáticos piensan que tú ganaste la pelea? ¿Es difícil para ti la frustración, pues, de que tal vez tú también sientas que ganaste?
La verdad, sí. Yo siempre he tenido, te puedo decir, la mayoría de peleas que he hecho aquí en Estados Unidos, que empecé a pelear yo aquí en, te puedo decir, la mayoría que yo tengo perdidas, tengo récord, pues, así que he perdido, pero la mayoría de peleas que he perdido me las han quitado. Y en vez de me frustra, pero a la vez me da más ánimo, y me apoyan, va a seguir entrenando más fuerte, preparándome, porque yo sé que peleas he ganado y me han quitado, como ahora esta pelea, peleando en eso también. Peleo en peso welter, mi motivación, he peleado yo hasta en 7 divisiones, y peleo en welter, super welter, y me animo, porque es algo que siempre me ha gustado hacer, el box. Y a veces que sí, como dices tú, pues a veces que he ganado peleas y no me la han dado, pero yo sigo demostrando a la gente que en el peso, si yo peleo, me subo a pelear de corazón y a ganar las, me preparo bien a ganar las peleas. Y a la gente, más que nada, ella es la que sale contenta, y la gente es la que se da cuenta que no te dan las peleas. La gente se da cuenta y te agradece, te aplaude, te abraza, te dice cosas. Y la verdad, ellos, los muchachos que le dan las peleas, muchas veces ellos no van a hacer nada. A mí me la quitan, a lo mejor por el récord, pero en realidad de las peleas, casi la mayoría me han quitado que las peleas, me las han robado.
You know, it's pretty frustrating. If you look at my record, it pretty much lies a bit, because
a lot of those losses that you see on my record are fights that have been taken away from me. He goes, but the satisfaction that I have is that when people go see Cristian Favela, they know they're going to have a really good show, and that's what's really, really satisfying to me, is that I go out there, give it all my best, and people are entertained by my performance. So, you know, it's a bit frustrating, but, you know, it is what it is.
Why the constant pace of fights that you're taking on? I mean, I've noticed you fight maybe, you could sometimes fight two or three times within the month. I mean, is the money that slim that you need to take every fight out there possible, or is this just the way you are? Are you just active like this?
Cristian, hemos notado que peleas muy seguido. Es importante pues para ti la cantidad de dinero de que te pagan, o sea, es por necesidad a este punto de tu carrera o simple y sencillamente porque estás activo y seguro, ¿por qué peleas tan seguido?
Muchas veces siempre he estado activo, yo soy de las personas de que no tengo visa más que nada y más que nada pido mucho a Dios, les pido, pero mucho siempre estar activo, entrenar, dejar de pelear y seguir entrenando para seguir peleando. No por necesidad, es lo que yo tengo, mi trabajo, pero también lo que me gusta hacer, dedicarme bien. A mí los años que me quedan, 2 o 3 años más y ya retirarme, pero yo no lo hago por necesidad, lo hago por estar entrenando, estar peleando y estar saliendo adelante, no por el dinero. Que aquí en el box pasa rápido el tiempo y más que nada hay que seguir preparándose, seguir echándole adelante y haciendo lo mejor que puedo.
It's not so much the necessity, though. He's okay financially. What I do right now, you know, I don't have any type of bad habits. You know, I don't smoke, I don't drink. I'm a religious person. I just like to be active, and, you know, I feel that I still have about 3 years left in my career. So, you know, at this point in time, this is what I like to do, and, you know, I go forward with it.
After a fight with Jesse Vargas, they rejoiced and they were excited because it was a fight that, like I said, myself and a lot of us felt you won. But after, in the aftermath of seeing them, because this is a kid that was highly talented, he's got everything in on his side of the fence. He's got the trainer, he's got the promotional backings, and he's got the guys giving him the right amount of money for the right amount of fights. When you're sitting there, and I don't know if you had a chance to see Jesse Vargas or any of the fighters that have beaten you, where you know that they lost to you, do you really truly believe they think they beat you? And do you sit there and go, what does he have that I don't, where I'm not getting that mutual respect?
Cuando tú peleaste con Jesse Vargas, después de la pelea, Cristian, tú lo miraste y tú sientes pues en ti que tal vez ganaste. Pero cuando tú ves a los otros peleadores que tienen el respaldo de un promotor fuerte, que es un prospecto bastante seguido, ¿qué sientes tú? O sea, ¿qué es el sentimiento que tiene Cristian Favela al saber de que, pues, que tú ganaste?
Sí, es muy buena pregunta. Muchas veces, cuando el qué chula, ojalá a mí me hubieran cuidado así como con los que he peleado, que estás en la esquina, que tú sabes que tú subes por la esquina ganadora y aunque pierdas, a ti te la van a dar porque te van a cuidar, tienes récord o tienes apellido. Y muchas veces me preparo a estar bien para preparar, para demostrarle a la gente que sí puedo, que en verdad sí me quitaron peleas. Ellos tienen muy buena esquina, buenos promotores. Ellos saben cuando, tú mismo sabes cuando ya que tú sientes que tú ganas. Ellos hasta se agachan la cabeza, los promotores o los que están contando las tarjetas, y se hacen bola, tardan para decisiones. Y es lo que uno, muchas veces uno se por darle le dicen a uno, dice uno, ah, ya empezó otra vez, me la van a robar o esto, pero eso para mí eso está muy mal. Yo en vez de me siento muy mal, pero por lo mismo usted echarle más ganas para demostrarle a la gente que todavía puedo. Y yo sé que hay mucha gente que gracias a mí peleas y me han apoyado y me siguen apoyando porque me subo a pelear, yo no me subo a que me están cuidando. Yo siempre le he demostrado con peleas que siempre puedo salir adelante, no que me las den o que me las quites.
It's a very good question. You know, it's very frustrating when as a fighter, you know when you won or when you lost. And usually when this takes place, I look across the other side of the ring, and these individuals are just looking down because, you know, they know that they lost. But, you know, I'm just happy with the people that come out and see me fight. You know, I give good performances, and that's all I can worry about at this point in time. But it's very, very frustrating.
You know, we have an interesting question from the chat room where fight fans are listening and tuning in and chatting as well as listening to the show and hearing Favela. And one of the questions they're asking is this, is that just at 2010, I mean, even in the beginning of his career, he was at 126, and it seems to fluctuate here and there. To the earliest of 2010, he was at 135, so now he's a welterweight. What is this? What is the weight that he's most effective in, and what is his true weight, his true fighting weight, that he feels that he's strong and he's at his best?
Cristian, ahorita en la pantalla están llegando preguntas del cuarto de chatear, y una de las preguntas que interesantes es de que ellos están viendo tus peleas y ven que en el 2010 peleaste en el Gallo, en la 126, y has subido y bajado, pero en realidad para Cristian Favela, ¿qué es su peso ideal? O sea, ¿qué es el peso que te sientes más cómodo?
Yo debuté, empecé peleando en Super Gallo, en Pluma. Duré años me coroné en pluma, en cinturón, y ahí me empecé el peso a, como dices tú, te empecé el peso a mermar, y para mí empecé a super pluma, y en ligero, me subía bien a ligero, ya, el cuerpo mío está, yo ligero, pero en ligero, super ligero, bien, pero quise demostrar a mí mismo que sí podía, o hay mucha gente, como lo ha hecho este paseado, dice mucha gente, ay, sube peso, yo empecé a subir ligero, super ligero, welter, hasta super welter he peleado, y he demostrado en verdad que sí tengo, a mí mismo me demostró que sí puede subir de peso, no pasa nada, si uno se prepara y hace las cosas bien, pero mi peso bien es ligero, super ligero, me siento fuerte, y gracias a Dios me siento bien porque me preparo, y aparte que no tengo visa, nada, ese es mi peso bien oficial, ligero, super ligero.
Given the fact that, you know, I'm really healthy, you know, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't have any addictions whatsoever. So I mean, I feel pretty comfortable at the 130, 135 weight. But you know, if I prepare myself for any given weight, I feel good all the time. But usually, I'm comfortable at the 130, 135 weight limit.
Mauricio Herrera is a guy that's, you know, he's been trucking along fairly well. You obviously are being brought in to be an opponent. What is your thoughts about Mauricio Herrera? What do you think is the strong points about him and the weak points of what you're going to try to take advantage of on Friday night at the Thompson card?
Cristian, tú obviamente vienes como oponente contra Mauricio en esta pelea. ¿Qué es lo que tú, qué es el plan, qué es la estrategia de vencer a Mauricio?
Esta pelea, fíjate, a mí como tengo bien preparado, me gusta, como te dije, prepararme con peleadores más fuertes que me peguen, a sentir el golpeo. A mí me han dicho que este muchacho es peleador fuerte y casi no se quita, va para adelante. A mí me gusta también de choque o también sé boxear, esta pelea, ojalá, subiendo el primer round, voy a tratar de boxearlo, pero si no, pues, al choque, traigo buen rendimiento, buena fortaleza, y Dios quiera, mañana lo voy a hacer, pero yo sé que vengo en contra de la promoción, en contra de todo aquí, y lo voy a demostrar que mañana, aunque tire golpes, trate de noquear para que me den las peleas.
Mauricio is a fighter that comes to you, that comes at you. It's very straightforward. So, you know, I'm the type of fighter that can switch in terms of boxing and coming forward as well. But tomorrow I'm just going to, you know, come out and box him a little bit in the first round, and then whatever comes or however he comes at me, then I'll try to counter back. But tomorrow, you know, I'm up against a promotional company. I'm against Mauricio, so I probably have to knock him out, but I'm going to come out and give it my best, and we'll see what the result is.
You know, really, really quick, you know, I want to give credit for the last question about the weight, where your weight is, to Cesar Hernandez and Azteca, who was asking the question. But as well, too, I want to let you know, Christian, that in my opinion, you're headlining this fight with Mauricio. I don't see you as an opponent. I kind of see Mauricio maybe knee-deep with you in this match. Now, Mauricio, the last time he lost, he's only lost one time. It was against Mike Cachonda, Mighty Mike. And he doesn't have a very high ratio of knockouts on his record. He's 16-7 KOs. Does that to you, do you see that as an advantage? I mean, because there's a possibility that, I mean, but he's a bigger guy. I think he's been in this weight division a lot longer. Yeah, he has. He debuted it at 148. Do you feel when you start off in a round like that, and being that you're in training camp, but you're not really training for a particular style, that you have to give rounds away in order to kind of fathom up a game plan and what you're going to do next?
Cristian, nosotros aquí en Libre en the Ring no, definitivamente no te vemos como un oponente, porque sabemos que es un contrincante bastante fuerte. Pero viendo el hecho de que este Mauricio ya tiene mucho en esta división, para ti, al empezar la pelea, tú sientes que tienes que dar unos dos, tres rounds para más o menos medir su estilo y medir su poder y su fortaleza.
Sí, las peleas, no te puedo decir, un round de estudio, se va dando base los rounds, y ya vas de esquina y todo, se van diciendo qué hace falta, qué hay que hacer. Pero sí, tienes que ver, más que nada, así como dices, son dos rounds, tres rounds, cuatro rounds, porque esto se puede acabar de un golpe, como te pueden tomar a ti, puedes tumbar al otro, o se pueden cortar. Uno pone y dispone, pero más que nada siempre son tres rounds, cuatro rounds, para ver, acomodarme y ver golpes que le están entrando y los que le pueden dañar.
Definitely, you have to get, you know, two, three rounds to kind of figure him out. Even though, you know, only that knows what's going to, you know, what the result's going to be, you know, he's the one that decides. But, yes, you definitely have to give those rounds to kind of figure him out, figure out his strength, figure out his speed, and move on from there.
Are you a manager's fighter's dream? I mean, you take every fight, so you definitely are feeding the manager. Do you think you're a manager's dream fighter?
Oye, Cristian, ¿tú piensas que eres el peleador de los sueños de un manejador? Por el hecho de que aceptas todas las peleas y nunca te rajas.
No, mira, pues a la vez yo preparo y te digo como digo todo, pero no, yo peleo con los mejores y me gusta pelear, muchos que van invictos y eso, pelear y demostrar que todo se puede en esta vida, echarle, más que nada echarle ganas y estar saliendo adelante, pelear. Yo no lo tengo, más que nada, pues uno está en el boxeo y no hay que tener miedo a nada, ¿sabes? Nos subimos al ring y el contrincante y vamos a tirar golpes, y es lo que hago, me subo concentrado y pues vamos a pelear y el peleador y seguir más que nada preparando, echarle ganas y más que nada que subiese uno y pedirle a Dios más que nada nos bajemos los dos y nos bajemos bien.
You know, I'm a fighter. This is what I do. You know, I get up into the ring and fight, you know, whoever my opponent is. I just like to fight, you know, this is what I do. I just pray to God that every time that I go up into the ring that, you know, nobody gets seriously hurt and that we're both able to come out of the fight on our feet. But, you know, I'm a fighter.
Well, I guess he can answer like this really quick. When his manager comes to announce to him he has another fight, does he come with a big cheesy smile or does he come hesitant?
Cristian, cuando vienen a ofrecerte una pelea, la persona que viene a ofrecerte la pelea viene con una sonrisa en la frente o la piensa para decirte que tienes otra pelea.
A mí me ofrece, me dice, hey, es una pelea así, contento, bien, porque saben que más que nada que me suba a la pelea, a dar show, no me subo yo de que te van a pagar, déjate que no, yo me subo a lo que doy, y sí, contento, sí, y muchas veces las empresas me brindan trabajo, y salen contentos conmigo, porque les gusta la pelea que doy, les gusta que doy show, más que nada para la gente. Y sí me ofrecen bien, contentos, dice, ay, va a pelear, qué bueno. Me suben bien, me brindan bien.
Nah, I just get the call, they ask me, they offer me the fight, and, you know, if it makes sense, you know, obviously I take it, but, you know, I fight whoever. And, you know, we talk about it a little bit, and if it's a done deal, it's a done deal, but, you know, it is what it is.
You know, we're almost to the end of the show. I have so much more to ask him. You know, Christian, I have so many questions to ask you, but obviously you're tired. You just got done from weighing in. I just want to wish you the best and, you know, hope you get this win. I mean, it's to the best man who wins. I like both you guys, Mauricio and yourself. I think you guys are great fighters. But I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm a huge fan of you. Fighters like you need to be applauded and lifted up. You know, Cesar Hernandez, who's the host of Noche de Boxeo, he put a great quote on the chat room saying that, you know, Glenn Johnson, who's another road warrior as yourself, he said once, I'm not the best. I'm just a fighter that wants to fight the best. And when somebody said like that, us fight fans, we have nothing but the respect for fighters like you guys because you're the backbone of this sport. And I appreciate you taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring.
Cristian, estamos llegando al final del segmento del show y tenemos tantas preguntas más que te quisiéramos preguntar, pero a este momento quisiéramos darte las gracias por platicar con nosotros un poco y como dice, what was that fighter's name?
Glenn Johnson.
As you mentioned, como dice Glenn Johnson, que él no solo es un que él es un peleador. No es un... Say it again, Dave. I got mixed up.
Okay. He said that... And let me read exactly because I don't want to mess it up either. I'm not the best. I'm just a fighter that wants to fight the best.
Glenn Johnson dice que no es el mejor boxeador, pero es el boxeador que quiere dar lo mejor de él. Y ese es el tipo de guerrero que tú eres. Y te deseamos mucha suerte para mañana. Y muchas gracias por estar con nosotros.
Ok, muchas gracias a ustedes. Qué bueno que me tomaron en cuenta. Y en cualquier cosa, pues aquí estamos. Te comunicas aquí con Jorge y le vuelvo a echar la publicidad y todo. Y muchas gracias por la entrevista y todo. Y a toda la gente que me ha visto pelear y que me sigue apoyando, pues muchas gracias.
Gracias.
Thank you very much.
So, I don't want to hang up on the wrong person here. So, Ernie, are you there? Okay.
I'm
here. Okay. Beautiful. You know, it's guys like this that end up coming up with the great stories that end up becoming movie stories and Hollywood stories that we fall in love with. You know, he's a guy that's under the radar. He's a guy that we don't take notice. And when we finally take notice, we end up taking notice of his career when it's at the end of it, you know, where he's not the guy that we once saw, you know, but he's a well-deserving fighter, a guy that I think we all want to root for to see end up getting that million-dollar payday like Ward and Arturo Gatti. Cristian Favela is one of those. He comes from that same cloth, man. There's no question about it, you know. He's brought in as an opponent, but he doesn't fight like an opponent. He fights like he's the draw. He fights exactly what he is a warrior. Ernesto, thank you again. Ernesto Torres, who's also our investor and sponsor of Leave It in the Ring. Ernesto's got a fight ranch over there in Victorville. He's trying to make it into private boxing corridors for fight fans to come over and, you know, be secluded so they can be in focus and prepared for the fights. Maybe we can get Cristian Favela over there, man. You know, that'd be nice. That'd be a nice take there.
Definitely. We'll work on it. And thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us, Dave. I really appreciate it.
Hey, brother. To you, too. I'll give you a call after the show and stuff. I'll talk to you later, man.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Again, fight fans, it's always appreciative. I always love the feedback. You can follow us on Twitter on Leave It in the Ring. You can email us at leaveitintheRing@gmail.com. If you want to get into the contest to win those tickets before this Friday, go to the leaveitintheRing.com and get on that poll. Tell us who you think is going to win. Again, hey, thank you, everybody. Have a great night, and I appreciate it.